It's as if fentanyl is raining on our reservation.
But I'll do anything to help.
Marvin Weatherwax Jr. is a tribal leader here and says much of the drug activity on his reservation stems from Mexican cartels selling to community members and using their homes, often in remote areas, as distribution hubs.
They've infiltrated our reservation. They've married in. They've basically set up shop. It's just a problem that won't go away.
Just this week, I officially designated the drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, including Tren de Aragua and MS-13, which gives us great power.
Trump's saying they're going to strategically target the cartels.
We're talking about sending military forces to fight against the drug cartels in Latin America. Do you think it's worth sending our forces, our U.S. forces there to take this on?
We love this country like they love their countries. We have to protect our country. So, we're playing a tough game.
Oh, you can't do that. So much money's laundered through. It'll collapse the economy. Trump doesn't care.
According to the New York Times, behind the scenes, Trump's moving all the pieces into place to pull this off. Mexico's got a big problema.
But it has nothing to do with Mexican territory. It has to do with their country. It does not involve our territory.
So it would be within the United States?
Within the United States, exactly.
El Presidente doesn't comprehend that.
Mexico's president draws red line U.S. kinetic operations against drug cartels not welcome on her soil. Well, you know what's not welcome? Millions of dead from fentanyl. And all the crime, and all the human trafficking, and all the crap.
In 1989, the Sinaloa drug cartel dug its first drug tunnel between a house in Agua Prieta, Sonora, to a warehouse located in Douglas, Arizona.
Is this appear to be an isolated case, or perhaps is it part of a tunnel network?
They're not quite sure about this. They say the investigation is continuing, but they say that they believe that this is in no way a maiden voyage for these people. They must have had quite a bit of financial backing and have been working in drug smuggling for quite some time.
Now, 34 years later, new evidence reveals that the Mexican drug cartels have burrowed their way into the American government.
The Sinaloa cartel's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let me get this right. The Federal Reserve of the United States of America is now in the business of money laundering. Count us in. And so now they are laundering their money through the pot industry of Colorado. One of the many problems in Mexico today is that the cartels have diversified. They've gotten into cargo theft and kidnapping and avocados and limes and real estate and local government. And criminality is always going to exist.
Arizona-based forensic investigator Jacqueline Brager dove down a deep rabbit hole into the sovereign dismantling corruption narrative after appearing in front of the Arizona Legislature's Senate Elections Committee and House Municipal Oversight and Elections Committee. Brager claimed that while investigating a nationwide racketeering epidemic involving the Sinaloa drug cartel, their team accidentally discovered election fraud. The web involved a real estate money laundering operation infiltrating all levels of government, constructed in order to trade influence to the Sinaloa cartel for backdoor money and control over elections and anyone that stood in their way.
We concluded that several real estate agents convicted in Iowa had set up laundering systems in Arizona and thereafter had transferred the proceeds of sales to the Panamanian corporations. These documents have definitely evidenced multiple racketeering enterprises.
And the Mexican military will finally work with us as soon as their president buckles. And the Army's pretty corrupt down there. I'm told from my sources the Navy and their Marines are pretty good, the Mexican Marines. And then, you know, Sheinbaum can take a hike down there if she wants to work with the cartels. So, you want to find a war Alex Jones is for? You want to find a war that I support? It's not against the Mexican people. They're the main victims of this, even worse than us. It is the drug cartels do not respect this country, do not respect us, and of course the CIA helped do it, and Trump's taking control of that. They're going after the banks that launder the money, they're shutting down the CIA operations, and they've told the cartels, they've had 7 months, and they told the Mexican government, Trump told them, you will make a real effort to shut this down, or we're going to come down there and we're going to kill people. Wars are when you're actually being killed by somebody. Wars are for when someone is crapping all over you. Wars is when a neighboring country does not respect you and is run by criminals that are attacked.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue.
I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. Oh, you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue, my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process in the cell. It's like iodine at the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
It's Tuesday, August 12th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Smith, welcome to The American Journal. I am Brianna Morello. Thank you for joining in this beautiful Tuesday morning. I'm filling in for Harrison, and I am glad to be doing just that. Welcome, folks. A lot going on all around the world, and we're going to break it all down for you today. I've got a lineup of incredible guests joining me on today's program, so I am thrilled that you are all here. Lots going on in the world. Obviously, President Trump trying his very best to push for world peace. I think we all get behind, unless you're a neocon, of course. But President Trump speaking out just a few moments ago on Fox, and it was interesting to listen in on. I'll give you some of those clips in just a few moments. But there's also a lot going on around the world. You may have heard, let's just talk about the FBI for a split second. The FBI right now has some changes being made. You might recall Andrew Bailey. That's a name of an individual who was supposed to be the Missouri Attorney General, who is now shifted over to the FBI with a new title, a title that none of us have ever heard of before. It's the co-deputy director of the FBI. That's a new role he's taking on. So I know a lot of you at home are probably wondering, what the heck does that even mean? And what does that mean for Dan Bongino, the current deputy director? I'm going to break that down for you on today's show. I've been hitting the phones pretty hard, trying to get a better understanding as to what's really going on here. Because many of you guys know, there's been rumors like crazy going on about the FBI, whether Dan Bongino is sticking it out. And I've got sources. They're telling me a lot. So we'll talk about that in just a few moments. Plus, there was an interesting story. I know it went viral because I posted it on my page as well regarding an alleged sexual assault that took place. And the individual's name is Mohammed Mohammed. It took place in Nashville. I just spoke to DHS earlier this morning regarding that individual. I'll give you the latest in just a few moments. And there's a lot of other things happening. Obviously, the war on immigration. Many of you guys know we have taken in millions and millions of illegal aliens thanks to the Biden regime. And we've learned some new updates regarding that Maine police officer who was working as a police officer, even though he wasn't a U.S. citizen. And the only reason we were able to catch him was because he applied to obtain a firearm. And apparently he's not allowed to have a firearm. So got an update on all of that. Let's break it all down. Let's jump into the first bit for today. I want to talk Russia and Ukraine because obviously President Trump is very much pushing towards peace between both of the countries. And the warmongers aren't very happy about that. They've been taking to the mainstream media, criticizing President Trump, going after him, saying he can't complete the deal, and saying that it's not a good deal if Ukraine's forced to give up territory. Folks, they're trying their very best to set the bar ridiculously high. Obviously, Ukraine lost this war, and they're going to have to give up land. That's how these things work. I mean, even here in the United States, we conquered land through war, and they're trying to downplay all of that. So we are going to discuss what happened today. Okay, so President Trump came out on Fox and Friends and said during his meeting yesterday, which you probably saw with all the European leaders and Zelensky all meeting together, that one of those leaders had a very questionable stance on all of this, looking to extend the timeline for peace talks. Take a listen.
And one of the things at the table was one of the gentlemen, who's a great guy, but he said, I hope I didn't insult him. He said, well, let's meet in another month or two, and let's see if we can start, making some way. I said, a month or two? you're going to have another 40,000 people dead in a month or two. You have to do it tonight. And I did, actually. I called President Putin, and we're trying to work out a meeting with President Zelensky. We'll see what happens there. And then if that works out, if it works out, then I'll go to the Trilat and close it up.
Isn't that something, folks? I mean, they literally want to keep this war going. You knew that. You and I both knew that. And it's also so shocking to hear Vladimir Putin come out and say that if Joe Biden just got on the calls with him, just made a phone call, one, just one, that war would have been would have never happened in the first place. It's enraging. Because thousands of Russians and Ukrainians, regardless of what side you fall on, died. For what? Folks, it's absolutely heartbreaking to see unravel, but there are some signs of hope. President Trump jumping on a phone call with Vladimir Putin yesterday during these meetings and saying that they both spoke and that Vladimir Putin is open to having a meeting with Zelensky over the next 2 weeks, which is obviously very, very important to open those channels of dialogue because nobody else has even tried to do that. Nobody else has tried to do that. You know, these European leaders came to the U.S. yesterday, came into Washington, D.C., and they're looking to push back the deadline. They don't want peace. They don't want peace. They'll give the illusion that they want peace, but it's not truly what they want. And so we're going to be talking about it throughout the show today. We've got a lineup of incredible guests joining us today. I know you guys are going to really love it because we're going to have a lot of different perspectives on the show today. I've got Chad Prather joining me in just a few moments as well. Senator Tommy Tuberville will also be joining the program later today. And so many more incredible guests. I'm going to ask all the tough questions in regards to this because it just doesn't make sense to me, folks, on why we've continued to allow this for this long of a period of time. All right, let's dive into some more topics because you might remember this story about this Maine, they always call him a Maine man, this Maine police officer who was not a U.S. citizen, was a law enforcement officer. Well, guess what? Good news. He just self-deported. He overstayed his visa and was somehow making his way into the police force. I don't even know if they do background checks these days. But the results of all of this, he voluntarily deported himself. And so he's no longer in the country. It's a win. But obviously, if there's ever a Democrat back in the White House, he'll probably try to make his way back in. Did you see this video? I thought it was quite jarring. It's regarding a 56-year-old man who is trying to kidnap a child, and ultimately law enforcement blurred out his face. Now, the media is circulating this footage, and it's quite shocking. But, folks, I don't even understand why we're blurring out the face of suspects. I see this all the time. All the time. When they want to sit there, they want to hide who these individuals are. They don't want to show who they are. They hide their faces. Take a look at this. This happened in Utah. You see this young mother rolling her stroller around. This individual will not leave her alone. Ultimately, he is trying to, well, allegedly, he's trying to kidnap the child. His name is 56-year-old Benjamin Dillman. Police say he was trying to kidnap the infant. Thankfully, he was unsuccessful. But that's the reality of the world we live in. Even in Utah, you have this going on. And why are police blurring his face out? It's enraging. We're seeing this time and time again. They do more to protect the suspects than the actual victims of these crimes. And it's absolutely devastating if, you know, we continue to allow this type of behavior. So again, I don't understand why we continue to let them do this, but we do. We let them continue to protect suspects. I'm so over this. I am so over with suspects being protected by law enforcement rather than the victims. The trauma this young mother had to go through while this was all happening to her. And we're going to do more to protect the suspect? It's happening all over the world. You and I both know they are altering crime statistics. They are trying to sit here and to suppress even the racial demographics of these suspects. They don't want you knowing who these suspects actually are. I mean, time and time again, we call it out. We look at police reports. We see that individuals who are clearly not white are being labeled white because they want to boost their crime stats for white Americans. And then you see this. Who needs a criminal defense attorney when you have law enforcement these days? And of course, it's not all law enforcement agencies. I know that. You know that. But these woke liberal hacks are completely destroying our country, our cities, with moves like this. They'd rather do more to protect these suspects than to protect the victims of crime. And it's not surprising. It's not surprising at all. And speaking of just that, I mean, there's just so much going on. And I know this video went viral over the weekend in Dearborn, Michigan. All right, so obviously in Dearborn, Michigan, there's a massive Islamic population there. But we're just receiving word there was an individual from Garden City, Michigan, who has just recently been arrested. Now, if you're wondering why this man has been arrested, his name is Anthony Young. He's 27 years old. He was arraigned on Monday on one misdemeanor offense, malice use of telecommunication services. If you're wondering why, well, they're alleging that he issued threats after watching that viral footage. You remember that viral footage in Dearborn, Michigan that populated over the internet over the weekend? You see a massive amount of Muslims taking to the streets. They're saying that this individual issued threats online and they arrested him. What's your take on it? Let me know. If you're on X right now, give me a follow. Drop a comment. I've got the Twitter feed for our InfoWars stream going on right now. What do you think about this? Because I think it's so strange, right? We talk about freedom of speech, and I get it. You can't make threats. But folks, this is what we're wasting our time on. We're going to arrest people for, what are the allegations against him? They're saying that he said something regarding a clip. Not a direct threat. Did he have plans to carry it out? Well, I'll just have to wait and see. Folks, when it comes to, I want to bring it back to the Russia-Ukraine topic. Because peace is on the way. And I know a lot of people are infuriated by just that. I'm talking about the globalists here. They are infuriated. They don't want there to be peace between Russia and Ukraine. President Trump, the only one with the guts to bring about that change. Theo Woods me now. He's a former deputy assistant to President Donald Trump, and he knows everything that's going on right now behind the scenes because he knows how the president operates. Let's welcome Theo to the show. Theo, I'm very excited to have you on. Thank you for joining me. It's quite impressive. We sat back yesterday. We watched as President Donald Trump was obviously hosting European leaders and Zelensky, and the mainstream media is still going after President Trump for trying to bring peace. They're trying to say that it's not a win for President Trump if Ukraine is forced to give up territory to Russia. What do you make of the mainstream media's coverage in all of this?
Here, the mainstream media's coverage is it's so predictable. This is exactly what they've been doing for years. They cheerleaded the war is in Iraq and Afghanistan. Iraq was doing, not only to American servicemen and women serving abroad. Legal narcotics and weapons that were then coming back into our country. So the mainstream media beclowned itself decades ago. And really at this point, I think it's fair to say they are pro-war. That. Mm-hmm. They have none of the president's compunction about the loss of life on both sides. And there is no concern from the mainstream media about what this will mean for U.S. strategic interests, right? Because the only people who really benefit and prosper from a protracted conflict are. And the Chinese. And that's who would love to see us stuck in a land war in Eastern Europe. So I think their coverage yesterday was totally predictable. And the notion. Thailand, not only in Rwanda and Congo, but on the European continent, and be able to accomplish that in a way that satisfies both American national security interests.
Hey, Theo, we're going to give you a second to reconnect with our control room because we're having a bit of connection issues. It's getting a little choppy. So we'll reconnect with Theo in just a second. And control room, just let me know when he's ready to go. But, you know, I love what Theo was getting at with that. You know, that will point out any flaw. They will say anything. They don't want this. The president has negotiated now so far the end of six other wars. And I was flipping through my Twitter feed earlier today and I noticed that Axios was trying to pick apart those six wars. They were trying to discredit his credibility behind just saying just that. I mean, he's bringing world leaders to the White House and making them promise and commit to peace. But for some reason, which is something that everyone should get behind, they're not happy with that. They're not happy at all. And it's just infuriating to see. We're going to connect with Theo in a second because he's got a lot to say, and I'm really excited to have him on for today. He did warn me, though, that he was on the road, so we'll get it together in just a few minutes with him. I'm sure it's a signal issue. We'll correct in just a moment. But again, folks, I mean, we could criticize the Trump administration. I do it all the time. It's okay to do so. But if you're against what's happening right now, you're a treasonous pig. There's no other way to look at this. I mean, President Trump is fighting to end wars, and they're still upset. It tells you everything you know about these people. They are hateful. They are bashful. They are awful. But it's not surprising. You and I have both known this for quite some time. I just couldn't believe. I mean, it's really impressive when you were looking at the footage yesterday from the White House, all of those European leaders gathered there. Have you ever seen anything like it? I know I haven't. It looked like the G7 summit. It's quite impressive. But again, you can't give him credit for it. You got to sit here and pretend like this is incredible. Like this isn't impressive. They could have done this years ago. Remember when Joe Biden said that whatever Ukraine needs, we'll just keep giving it to them. A blank check. I mean, it was as simple as getting on the phone with these people and trying to have a conversation. They didn't want that, though. None of them wanted that. Folks, it's enraging. It is absolutely enraging because, again, thousands of lives lost. And to hear President Trump coming out and saying this on Fox and Friends earlier today, saying that one European leader was looking to open up discussions maybe in a month or two from now on this topic again. How many people are going to die? And they don't even care. They don't care. The footage from Ukraine is devastating. And we're dealing with people that just don't seem to care. All right, let's bring Theo back in. As many of you guys know, I just had him on for a split second there. Theo Wood, he is the former deputy assistant to President Donald Trump, and he joins us again. All right, Theo. So back to what you were saying. Obviously, President Trump ending 6 wars, and the media is still bashing on him. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's typical for the media. They are pro-war, and the idea that Donald Trump could accomplish something that neither Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, neither of the European Union presidents, nor any of the individual sovereign leaders of those European states like Macron or Merz, that Donald Trump could negotiate these peace settlements not only in Africa, not only in Asia, but also potentially on the European continent is something that just really rankles these folks. The globalists think that the narrative belongs to them. And once again, Donald Trump is upsetting the arc of that narrative. And I think the important takeaway from yesterday was it's not just that President Trump met Putin in Alaska, on favorable ground for President Trump on his terms, but also he had to have all the lapdogs of Europe come to the White House yesterday begging for their scraps of attention. So I think President Trump is in the driver's seat here. And I think, you know, as you led into the segment, Brianna, it's really important to note, look, people should do their history and they should review some of these places that are being discussed, right? I think it's really important to go back and study, for example, look up the history of Sebastopol on the Crimean Peninsula. That is a Russian-speaking outpost. It's been a part of Russian culture for centuries. So a lot of Americans want to portray this conflict as, on one side, it's Ukraine. They're Ukrainian nationals. It's Ukraine has a cultural, religious, language ties. And on the other, it's Russia. And neither shall the two ever meet. And I think that the situation on the ground is actually a lot more complicated, especially in these disputed provinces that Russia is currently laying claim to.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for folks to understand. I mean, it's such a complex issue, and I don't think most Americans realize how complex it is, and I think we're starting to dig our way through it. But the reality is when I'm sitting here and listening to all these talking heads on the MSNBCs, CNNs, I mean, they have no idea what they're talking about, and that's the reality. Theo, I wanted to get your take on this, too, because we heard from President Trump just a few moments ago, and he was detailing how one European leader wanted to return to those negotiations in maybe a month or two from now. They're looking to stall and kind of drag this on. President Trump saying it's a priority. We're going to wrap this up. We're going to do this now. We're not going to sit here and keep dragging this on. Why is it, though, that these world leaders think that they could come back to the negotiations table and have another meeting in a month from now? Obviously, President Trump is gearing for this to be finalized in the next couple of days. And we see that Vladimir Putin is accepting the fact that they might meet in the next 2 weeks. So why do you think these European leaders are pushing to extend this?
I mean, I think you said it yourself. It's to stall the momentum.
Yeah.
And also, look, I mean, these leaders are typical of globalists, those that operate in our country or throughout the world, which is they have absolutely no regard for the lives and the livelihoods of ordinary citizens, whether those citizens be American or in this instance, whether they be Ukrainian and Russian citizens. So the idea that the conflict could go on for another couple months, what's it to them if another 1,000 or 5,000 civilians and Russian and Ukrainian soldiers end up dead? So I think President Trump and the Trump administration feel the urgency of ending this conflict, in particular of ending the bloodshed. And that's why they want to sort of harness the momentum coming out of Alaska and push on for a final settlement.
Yeah, yeah. Theo, if you had President Trump's ear right now, what kind of advice would you give him with in his dealings with this? Because he seems to be doing a pretty good job. But what would you advise him?
I mean, honestly, I can't armchair quarterback this in a way that would improve upon the situation. I think the stagecraft of the meeting in Alaska was perfect. I think the way the president has used his personnel, including Secretary Rubio and Special Envoy Witkoff, have been absolutely masterful. Keep the president out of the nitty-gritty back and forth for the first few months, and then allow him to step in and harness the architecture of a deal and drive it home. And then I think the final point of, you know, allowing him essentially to negotiate in the Armenian-Azerbaijani conflict, the Rwandan-Congolese conflict, and then the Thai-Cambodian conflict, it's obvious that world leaders look to President Trump for that strength and that sort of security of a firm footing for a lasting peace, wherever the conflict may be. The only people who don't are essentially the Europeans and those who are looking essentially to ensure that the United States remains, you know, as it was under President Biden, a second fiddle, unable really to drive world events. And that's changing under President Trump. So I can't armchair quarterback this situation and say it should be done any differently or any better. I think the important thing now for the White House is to maintain the momentum.
Yeah, and he's doing a great job at just that. Thea, thanks for joining the show today. I know you're a very busy man, so it's an honor to have you when we can. We greatly appreciate it, of course. Thank you so much, Theo, for joining us today. So much insight on those issues, and I really love hearing from Theo. Very busy man, so we appreciate his time. We've got a lot of incredible guests coming your way in just a few moments. My good friend, Chad Prather. Chad is joining the show today. And we're going to talk about election fraud because President Trump hit Zelensky with a zinger yesterday, and if you missed it, we're going to play it for you. But it was very, I chuckled when President Trump grilled Zelensky about not having a presidential election because his country was at war. We're going to talk about Chad. We're going to talk about that over with Chad in just a few moments. Plus, I'm also going to talk about strategicness. What does President Trump need to do? We heard there was suggestions that boots were going to be on the ground in Ukraine to kind of extend this commitment and provide them with security. We're learning more about that, but Mark Lucas is going to be joining the show to detail specifically what he thinks is going to be happening on that front. And a lot more incredible guests. Senator Tommy Tuberville joining the show today as well. A lot of people happening on this show in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene blue tube. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshore.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it, yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed, it's not caffeine, it's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, thealexjonesshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it from SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShore.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychological. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Watch it live right now at band.video.
Ah, folks, it is I, Brianna Morello, filling in for Mr. Harrison Smith. Welcome back to American Journal. Lots going on in the world today. You know, I love it when we call it election fraud. I love it. And President Trump doing just that. And I'm very thankful for it, of course. But my favorite thing about it is when President Trump calls it out straight to these corrupt world leaders' faces. And yesterday, he had the perfect platform to do just that. During his meeting yesterday with Zelensky, President Trump confronted the Ukrainian leader about not having elections because, well, his country's at war. Take a listen.
Legal elections.
So you say during the war, you can't have elections. So let me just say, 3.5 years from now, so you mean if we happen to be in a war with somebody... No more elections. Oh, that's good. I wonder what the fake
you like this idea.
Yeah,
no.
Speaking of news, I got a question for you. This sounds.
I mean, how perfect is that? He doesn't even know how to answer. He doesn't even know how to answer President Trump. Confronting him with his corruption, I love to see it. Joining me now to discuss, my good friend, Mr. Chad Prather. Chad, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here with me. I know I've been pressuring you to jump on with me. You do an incredible show. Over on Rumble, the Chad Prather show as well. I highly recommend to our audience that they tune into that as well and give you a follow. Chad, President Trump yesterday confronting Zelensky about not having presidential elections because his country is at war. Your reaction?
Hey, Brianna, thanks for having me. You know, Trump is the master when he's got the media in front of him. He doesn't avoid the microphone. He doesn't avoid any questions. He loves the attention, and he knew the spotlight was going to be on him yesterday in a big way. So this is the master salesman, the guy in a sledgehammer in the gold filigree, right, who knows how to do a couple of things at the same time. One, he put Zelensky in his place by calling out his own dictatorial style of banning elections during wartime in the way that he did, but at the same time trolling the media by getting them talking about it for the next 36 hours, and now everybody's going to say that Trump's not going to allow an election in 2028. I think this is a genius master move. It keeps people talking about things. It puts Zelensky in his place, calls out the corruption. At the same time, it keeps the media turned on, doing whatever it is they do, except focus on the truth. So I thought it was great.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And he does such an incredible job at just that. And I like to see, the VP in the background, J.D. Vance, was kind of like, just there, but we remember what happened last time. J.D. Vance was a little pit bull going after Zelensky, so he was much calmer than he was last time around. So it was interesting to see. But, Chad, I wanted to get your take on this because President Trump went on Truth Social yesterday and was talking about something that has been on the front of my mind for a very long time now, and I was hoping it was going to be a top priority for this new administration. I'm talking about mail-in ballots because, you know, we all know that's where the corruption begins when they're able to steal these elections through that process. And so President Trump taking the Truth Social saying, I'm going to lead a movement to get rid of mail-in ballots, and also while we're at it, highly inaccurate, very expensive, and seriously controversial voting machines. And then he just keeps going on to say that he's going to sign an executive order to protect our elections. But the mail-in ballots is my main focus because we just recently saw that there was, I believe it was in Michigan, they were dumping these ballots into these voting boxes, and they caught these candidates and their allies, like I should say, dumping these ballots into the boxes. We've all seen it time and time again. True the Vote obviously pouring out a bunch of evidence to show there's election fraud throughout mail-in ballots. So do you support President Trump doing this through an executive order? Because we haven't heard Congress or any of these Republicans even speak about this.
Yeah, well, you know how executive orders work. Obviously, they don't mean anything if the Congress doesn't get involved. Now, I think that this is a brilliant move on his part because it does get people talking about this again. And also, like, I've often said that I think that we should have to go even further than that. I think they should clear the voter rolls and everybody should have to re-register. Let's see who's here. Let's see who's legal. Let's see who should be voting in this country. We have to get our passport renewed every 10 years. Your driver's license expires. I think we should have to do that with our right to vote. And by the way, when we talk about the right to vote, voting is a privilege. It's a sacred honor. It's something that should be protected. And it means a very little if the process itself is compromised. If you can't trust the system, and, you know, the results, no matter who wins, are meaningless. That's why President Trump's vow to eliminate this chaos of the universal mail-in ballots is a pledge to strengthen and not weaken democracy, no matter how much the left with their rigging is going to lose their minds over this stuff. I think it should be, you know, our founding fathers thought that it should be a hard thing to do, not an easier thing to do. You were allowed to vote if you owned property, and there was one vote per household. Our founding fathers understood something about that. You know, mail-in voting, and again, we got to clear the misconception. People think that he's going to take away absentee ballots or, you know, our military deployed or shut-ins or older, elderly, geriatric. We're not talking about that. We're talking about this whole easier to participate. Easier doesn't mean safer. Voting isn't supposed to be like ordering pizza from the couch. When you got millions of ballots that are floating through the postal system, sitting in mailboxes, apartment lobbies, and even in trash bins, that chain of custody is broken. That's not security. It's absolute vulnerability.
Yeah, and I think that's really important for folks to understand. And I thought it was also interesting to hear Vladimir Putin kind of hint at what happened back in 2020 and mm-hmm. the fact that if President Trump was in the White House and believing that that election was stolen as well, that their war would have never broken out in the first place because President Trump would have at least gotten on the phone and spoken to the world leaders to calm things down, which obviously we know Biden refused to do, or whoever was occupying the White House at that time refused to do, because they wanted this all to happen. But Chad, I want to get your take on this as well, because I'm constantly going after the DOJ, because as of right now, I'm very disappointed. I think that we should have had a blueprint as to what we're going to do once we took over. And it's really disappointing to see that there's still no arrest, but there's still no special counsel regarding election fraud in 2020. I know that was a top priority for President Donald Trump, but Pam Bondi hasn't yet appointed one. Your thoughts?
Well, it seems to me like the GOP, anytime we take power, is never quite prepared. We don't have a blueprint. We make a lot of promises. Like, if you remember back in 2016 when Trump took office, no one expected him to be there. They thought Hillary Clinton was going to be the next one in line. That's why they didn't have a plan to get rid of Obamacare or do something in its place, and we're still struggling with that. This is the same situation when it comes to the DOJ. They talk big, but when you get in there, there's this insulated sense of protection where people become untouchable. We know there's corruption. We know there's lawbreakers. We know there's people who have done some flagrant fouls against our country and against our system of law and order, but they're not being held accountable. So I agree with you. You know, there are certain things that have been done. There's whistleblowers that have not been reinstated. There's transparency that has not been given. There are documents that we were promised that still haven't been exposed. There are things that we want to get to the bottom of. There was transparency that was told that we was going to be the most transparent administration in the history of America, but we haven't seen that at this point. I think people are getting very frustrated with it. I think if anything, that could be, I think in the first term, I think Operation Warp Speed was the big chain around the Trump administration's neck. I think this lack of transparency or this lack of accountability could happen in the second term.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about this because you were the victim of the lack of transparency from the DOJ, and I tried to highlight it, and I came to your defense in this because I don't think people really understand, but they love to put the images of the binders, the Epstein binders, the Phase One photos up. And we just recently heard yesterday, actually, from James Comey that his committee is working with the DOJ, and the DOJ is handing over those documents, and they could expect more of those documents to be given over by Friday of this week. They're now claiming transparency, but can we really trust them? I mean, they literally handed those in the White House, the social media influencers that were in the White House, binders, and then wouldn't let you guys kind of read it, just kind of touted you guys in front of cameras, and then made you guys not say anything for hours about this. I mean, can we really trust the DOJ right now? Have they learned their lesson?
No, I don't think so. Not at this point. I think as long as Pam Bondi's the attorney general, we're going to continue to have these problems, and this is going to be a cloud that hangs over the administration. You know, obviously on that day, we weren't told what we were given. We were just trotted out in front of the press. We were in hopes that the administration was doing exactly what they had promised, and that was bypass the mainstream and legacy media and try to get information out directly to the public through people like myself that have a platform. And anybody that had been there that day, anyone who had been there that day would have done the exact same thing when trotted out surprisingly in front of the press pool in the back of the White House, in the back of the West Wing, with that thing. But we weren't there for that purpose. We weren't, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum. We weren't there for that purpose. That was dropped in our lap. We were truly hoping that this was a significant step as a phase that was going to move to this thing, to more information being given out, but it wasn't, and it didn't, and it does not happen. And now we've even had situations where President Trump has said, you know, we need to let it go. We're not letting it go. I mean, in fact, I keep that binder right here beside me pretty much at all times on my set as a reminder that we're not letting it go. It's a constant reminder of a pain point here. I'm a person who did a lot of deep dives into Epstein and his crimes many, many years ago when I was on the Blaze Network. I mean, that stuff is out there. There's a ton of content that we exposed back in those days. So this was not new content. Everybody's frustrated with this thing. Nobody's protecting anybody. If anything, we're calling for accountability in this. So we want to see transparency on the part of Pam Bondi. We want to see this Department of Justice. We want to see this Attorney General's office. I am excited that my friend Andrew Bailey, the AG of Missouri, is now deputy director of the FBI. I don't know exactly what that means. We could speculate. But I know Andrew, and I know Dan Bongino. I'm excited about some of those guys that are there. But one has to scratch their head and figure out and wonder, what are we going to see, if anything?
Yeah. Well, that was actually my next question for you, because, you know, I was making some phone calls yesterday, and people are telling me that Dan Bongino is not out at the FBI. So what's your takeaway from all of this? Because obviously, you know, AG Bailey in Missouri is someone who is highly respected. He's one of our top, I would say, five AGs around the country. We don't really have many strong Republican AGs. He's one of them, though, thankfully. And so that now that he's making his way over to the FBI, what do you make of that?
Well, he was my pick for Attorney General for what that's worth. I thought he would have been the guy, and I'm friends with, of course, Attorney General Ken Paxton here in the state of Texas. He would have been a great one, although I think it would have been problematic in a lot of ways, and I think Ken Paxton's right where he needs to be right now. But Andrew Bailey's a good guy. He's a fighter. He stood up against the woke mob and the progressive left in Missouri, and he has proven over and over again that he is a fighter. So I like that. I don't think Dan Bongino's going anywhere. And if I had to speculate, I would think that this is a temporary stopping point for Andrew Bailey. We'll see what's next.
Yeah.
But maybe they're just trying to get his feet wet. I mean, now you have two guys in there who they don't have FBI experience, neither Bongino nor Bailey, which, again, that's fine. But we'll see what's next for him. This could be interesting because this has never happened before in American history. We've never had co-deputy directors of the FBI. So it seems to me like somebody's getting their feet wet for something that may be coming next.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think, too. And I'm excited about that. You know, my source is also telling me that this is just temporary for him, that he sees it to be something more. And so we'll kind of see how this all unravels. But Pam Bondi, you know what? The one thing I'm thankful about this administration is when we apply public pressure, when, you know, obviously President Trump's voters sit there and say that they're not happy with someone and they speak out and they're very public about it. This administration actually listens, which is something we don't normally see. So they respond to the pressure. And so, you know, when we all started speaking out about the Epstein files and how we weren't happy with President Trump's response on that front, all of a sudden we did see change. And we saw changes quickly being made, whether it was the transcripts from the grand jury reports that were being requested from judges. I mean, although obviously the judge did shoot that one down, it was still us applying pressure and telling, you know, the DOJ, we're not going to sit here and settle for documents we've already received. We're not going to sit here and allow you to dismiss us when we're asking you for, you know, who specifically was Epstein working with and who was he or who was going to his mansion, his islands. I mean, we aren't going to sit here and settle. And I like the fact that when we apply pressure that they did respond. I think that's really important. Do you think that they're learning a little bit more or so? Because, I mean, the first administration, the first time around for President Trump, we would speak out publicly about people like Bill Barr, and he just continued to keep his position, and President Trump learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah, I think this is a different administration, obviously, for a lot of reasons. I think President Trump thought that he could work with the system in the past. He learned really quick that they were going to try to crucify him, and that's exactly what they did during the Biden administration by weaponizing the courts and using the lawfare. I think this is a different administration. I think this is an administration that cares. I believe Donald Trump in this administration cares about the American people, both the left and the right. I think he wants to do what's best for our country and its citizens. And I do believe it's one that's accessible. Think about it. I'm a dude in a cowboy hat that's gotten invited to the White House a couple of times. I'm nobody. I'm a comedian. I make a living, you know, entertaining people and doing a podcast. But there has been accessibility there. I can reach out to people in the White House and get a response. I mean, when in history have you ever seen a world in which we do have a White House and in its administration that you can say, hey, you know what? I knew that guy personally. Like I know Pete Hegseth. I know these men and women. I've known them in the past and still know them. This is an amazing time to be alive. And I think that we have a White House that has to keep a lot of cards close to the vest. But at the same time, I think they do understand and they do listen to the voices of those that are out there. Listen, this is this is a podcast presidency. I mean, this is a guy who that was basically what got the man reelected, to the tune of 77 million votes. So I think that this is an administration that understands the court of public opinion, also understands the base, understands the people that are out there listening to shows like this one and listening to us as talking heads and what we have to say. And they understand that the people are influenced by that. So I think he is listening.
Yeah, I think he is listening. And I think it's funny because I've for a very long time thought the left inflated their numbers when it came to support, when it comes to viewership numbers, when it comes to their X followings. I mean, I'm watching the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC on X have millions of followers, but their interactions are significantly low. And as time has gone on, we've seen the collapse of a lot of these talking heads that they want to continue to sit there and say, oh, President Trump's the reason why shows are being canceled. When in all actuality, the American people never really supported these shows. And then you also have to wonder the timing on a lot of these individuals with the USAID getting canceled. And all of a sudden, the left-wing media is collapsing completely. I want to get your take because MSNBC is trying to rebrand itself to MS Now. And Chad, I think it's so funny because, you know, now they're being open and saying that their opinion, and they've always pretended to be just a bunch of credible journalists, but now their opinion and they're openly telling that to the public, but they're also trying to sell. NBC Universal's been trying to sell the network. It doesn't look good for them, obviously, if they have to rebrand, right?
No, it's garbage. You know, they should call MS, should stand for Maddow Show. That's about the only talking head over there that I think is even halfway relevant anymore in terms of their numbers. Listen, I could say that, yeah, that's their problem was their branding, their logo. That was the issue was the name. They needed to change that. No, they'll still be peddling the same BS. It's still going to be the same garbage. It's always been an opinion. They're all going to end up over on Substack. None of them matter. Anything. This has always been a leftist diatribe re network that where they want to peddle their crap out there. And there's never been any accountability. Well, the ultimate accountability comes with the fact with the numbers and the numbers of viewers, the numbers of subscribers, numbers of dollars that are coming in. Are people advertising with you? These things, they're dead in the water. Legacy media is dead. MSM, mainstream is dead. It's just not going to happen anymore. Yeah. Folks like yourself, people refer to you, Rihanna, on X for their news. And that's a good thing. Because you do the diligence, the due diligence, you do the work, you dig in, you have the sources, you are very responsible with the information you receive and you put out there. And you and I have been friends for a long time now, so you know I'm not blowing smoke. That's just where people go to get their news. The people like yourself.
Yeah. It's a very funny world we live in. I mean, I consider myself to be a little bit of a trendsetter, right? I left the corporate media world and started doing independent journalism. And then that's when the corporate media world started collapsing. So I take credit for that, even though it's probably not something that I should. But Chad, I wanted to thank you for joining us today because you do an incredible podcast. I know you're a busy, busy man. Chad Prather, thank you for joining the program. He's the host of the Chad Prather podcast. Give him a follow on Rumble and on X. Chad, thank you for joining us. And speaking about, okay, so let me just give you some background. During the Biden regime years, I tried reaching out for comments and everyone hated me. Nobody spoke to me. DHS, ICE, the White House, they never responded. I even got, I don't know if you guys saw the photo. This is, over a year ago. I even got, and this is how dumb government employees are. I even got an email forwarded to me accidentally, from DHS referring to me as a non-favorable reporter. And to be careful how they respond to my emails because ICE accidentally sent that to me, CC'd me in the email, and I roasted them for a little bit about it. I've had fun. I mean, it's like an endorsement. And then Biden regime and all of its little tentacles just doesn't like you. It was quite the honor, I must say. But now I'm getting somewhere. Now I reach out and people, there's the picture. You guys are the best. That is the picture. I've got it framed, that email that they accidentally sent me. I'm pretty sure if I looked her up on LinkedIn, the person who accidentally sent it to me probably doesn't have a job anymore. But it was quite the honor. It was quite the honor. Because anyone who is being endorsed, actually endorsed by the Biden regime, isn't a journalist. But the reason why I mentioned this is there was a story that I think is really, really important. Just to highlight, I know I posted about it over the weekend on X. And like Chad just told you, you know, I bother everyone. I follow through with things. I constantly reach out for comment, follow up. And this story, because it was just so gut-wrenching, there was a homeless woman in Nashville who apparently she might have been under the influence. We don't know. But she was stumbling. And she had stumbled upon a church and their stairs. And that's when this alleged suspect, Mohammed, I mean, imagine vetting this. It's very hard to do. Mohammed is the individual who is now being accused of sexually assaulting that homeless woman who later actually passed away at the hospital. He He is 39 years old. Law enforcement put out a detailed statement about all of this, saying that the Nashville Fire Department was driving around when they spotted the suspect and the victim, and they thought that it looked like it was a sexual assault going on. So they ended up stopping. The details are really upsetting. They said that Mohammed was attempting to pull up the unconscious victim's pants when the fire department did confront him. Now he's being held right now. Police were able to identify this victim, but they're not doing so publicly based on her fingerprints. So they do believe that she is homeless. He's being held right now. He's got four counts of rape on $300,000 bond. I know when I posted this over the weekend, though, a lot of you at home were saying, is this someone who's a U.S. citizen? Well, thankfully, again, and I want to just keep highlighting this, DHS, even though that name is very difficult to vet and they don't, the police departments aren't very helpful with federal agencies or even journalists, was able to look up the information. And DHS did get back to me earlier today telling me that he is a naturalized citizen, so he is a citizen of the United States. I know there was a lot of speculation about that, so I just wanted to clarify that. But folks, the fact that these people are so emboldened, these monsters are so emboldened to do that on the staircase of a church, it's just heartbreaking. It's devastating. We need to do better. We need to do better. It's just absolutely devastating. And again, Nashville police, I get it. They're busy. But I've called three times. No one answers. And to understand a little bit about this, folks, when a journalist reaches out to a police department, there's specifically, it's called PIO, just a police officer who's supposed to give information out to the media. They're supposed to answer. Nashville police not answering. There's three people who were designated to it. I've made several attempts to reach out to all of them. There's no email. But this is what happens. You know, they claim to be transparent. Not so much. Not so much. But we'll keep doing the digging on this because, again, we need to. We need to hold people accountable. We need to go and dig for the truth because police departments don't put all the information out that you need to know. And so I know there's a lot of speculation there, but I'm glad we were able to clear that information up for you. Now, folks, as an independent journalist, I obviously do a lot of digging into stories, crime stories, dark stories sometimes. But I just recently started a project, and I'm very excited about this, and I kind of wanted to show it off a little bit. As many of you guys know, I want to celebrate beautiful women because we don't do that in our society anymore. In fact, we actually shame beautiful women, which is such a strange thing to do. I mean, I know you at home probably don't do that, but the mainstream media does it. And so I came up with the idea because I was somebody who used to have a Princess Diana book when I was a kid. And I loved looking at Princess Diana's outfits and her wardrobe, and I thought she was gorgeous. So I have now launched my first official project. It is a Melania Trump coffee table book, the photo book. And I'm very thrilled about this. It is available right now for pre-order on Amazon. And it's something that I am so happy about because, you know, they love showing Michelle Obama, Jill Biden, some of the most unattractive women in American history. Let's celebrate Melania Trump. It's available right now for pre-order on Amazon. Just search my name, Elegance in the White House, Melania Trump, stunning woman. We're very lucky to have her as our first lady. Not only is she stunning, but she's also intelligent, speaking multiple languages. She's brighter than any lefty, although they like to bash her. She is by far the best. I mean, she even wrote a letter to Vladimir Putin to end the war. Jill Biden could never. Michelle Obama could never. We'll be back with more. Thank you.
The ancient blue wizard is who I be. The magic of Methilene flows through me. These wars of info have gone through the ages to keep your minds locked in cages. Break free from the lies and save your soul, or the demonic agenda shall reach its goal.
Upon this field, with steel in hand, I guard the truth across the land. No tyrant's crown, no foreign laws shall pierce the shield of InfoWars. This dagger's point, both sharp and true, defends the rights for me and you. So grab your phone without delay, and go to the website if you may. Order your dagger to stand in the fight before the globalists turn out the lights.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because, folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. I am Brianna Morello filling in for Harrison Smith. A lot happening today on American Journal. We've got a jam-packed program for you today. I've lined it up with a bunch of great guests, and I'm excited that you're here with us, because I know you're going to really enjoy today's show. We're waiting to speak with Senator Tommy Tuberville in just a few moments. Obviously, we're going to get his reaction regarding Zelensky, the meeting at the White House. But most importantly, I also want to know what's going on in Washington, D.C. in regards to crime, because that's been a top priority for the Trump administration, cleaning things up. Also, Mel Kay joining us in just a little bit as well. And Alex Rosen, predator poacher, going to be in studio today to discuss a lot. Obviously, there's a lot going on in regards to Epstein as well. And so I'm excited that he's going to be here. Real quick, I want to get to this guest and then carry him over to the next break, because Mark Lucas is joining us. He's the founder of the Veteran Action. And he's someone who I look forward to having some insight on today's show. Mark, thanks for jumping on with me today. I know it's early in the morning, so we appreciate your time. We saw yesterday in the White House an incredible meeting between not only Zelensky and President Trump, but also a bunch of European leaders. And that's something that we've never seen at the White House. It kind of looked like a G7 summit, but it was very impressive. And we heard from President Trump saying that he is potentially not ruling out sending U.S. troops to Ukraine in regards to helping them with the security guarantee. But President Trump on Fox and Friends earlier today saying that boots on the ground are just not an option for him. What do you make of that? Because Zelensky is probably going to want some U.S. involvement to make sure that that promise of security is actually carried through.
Well, it was a historic week when you look at Alaska with the summit with President Putin, and then you look at the meetings yesterday, the truly historic meetings with all of those European leaders being in the Oval Office. But President Trump, he is an absolute expert negotiator. I've seen this firsthand. I voluntarily deployed to South Korea at the height of the tensions with Kim Jong-un, and I see a lot of the same playbook that President Trump has used back then on the peninsula, now with Vladimir Putin and with Zelensky. And so he's going to keep all of his options open. I did see some of the remarks he made yesterday about potentially having an American force there help. But this morning he came out very loud and clear and said that there will be no American troops that will defend the Ukrainian border. He said that very clearly on Fox and Friends. But I do see that President Trump wants to have a wide array of options at his disposal. And one of the biggest things he has is dialogue. And the failed foreign policy establishment, I saw this all the way back to the Cold War with North Korea. They do not want to have dialogue. They try to isolate presidents from talking with other world leaders. And President Trump, he shattered the norms with Kim Jong-un. He was the first sitting American president to meet with a North Korean president. And also, President Moon Jae-in of South Korea, following those negotiations that President Trump had with Kim Jong-un, said that President Trump deserved to win the Nobel Peace Prize. So I'm seeing that same dialogue, and that President Trump is prioritizing diplomacy and peace. And that's why we're having this movement in Ukraine that we haven't had for the last 4 years.
Yeah, and it was very laughable when I saw Hillary Clinton saying that potentially President Trump could get the Nobel Peace Prize, but she's also setting the bar very, very high, which I think is nearly impossible. I'll get to you after the break about the territory battle, because I think that's really, really important that we discuss the details in regards to that, because again, they're saying that if Ukraine is forced to give up any land, that it's not a real good deal. I don't know where they get that absurd idea. I mean, if you lose a war, you have to give up land. So they're setting the bar extremely, extremely high. Mark, stay with us for just a few more moments. We're going to come right back to you because I really want your intake on that and so, so much more. Folks, we'll be right back in just a few moments.
Good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Do you feel like you have that going forward and, you know, past this Trump administration, it won't be American boots on the ground defending that border?
Well, you have my assurance, and I'm president, and I'm just trying to stop people from being killed, Charlie. Look, they're losing from 5 to 7,000 people a week.
But strangely enough, this is not a top priority for everyone. European leaders coming together yesterday at the White House, it was very impressive to sit back and watch. But President Trump speaking out and saying U.S. boots on the ground isn't even an option. We also heard from President Trump saying that one European leader wanted to wait a little bit longer before they reignite these peace talks, something to the tune of like a month or two. President Trump saying, no, the preservation of human lives is his top priority, and we're going to end this now. Joining us again is Mark Lucas. He's the founder of Veteran Action, and he is with us today. Mark, thank you very much for being here. Again, like we just said, obviously President Trump coming out and saying that, no, we're going to end this war. We're not going to sit here and drag this on. He cites one European leader looking to go back to this negotiations discussions, possibly in a month or two from now. President Trump angling this and saying that this is his top priority to save human lives. I mean, it should be everyone's priority. Why do you think not only Joe Biden when he was occupying the White House, but all these European leaders, they are taking their time walking this slowly and they never really cared to end this war in the first place, it seems like.
Well, that unnamed European official talked about coming back in a couple of weeks and President Trump said, are you crazy? You'd lose up to 40,000 people by then. It just shows that President Trump's priority is truly about saving lives. And there's a lot of different interests, geopolitical interests that are involved in this when you look at the EU or NATO or the military-industrial complex in the United States or the United States Senate. There are a whole host of different reasons why people want this war to continue. But President Trump has been clear from the beginning. He just wants the killing to stop. And I appreciate that as a former war fighter. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2010. It was the deadliest year of the war. And oh, by the way, if you're surging forces 9 years after 9/11, you're probably losing the war. And President Trump wanted to bring a peaceful end to that war. He also was able to call Iraq a big fat mistake in the presidential primary in 2016. That was heretical at the time, but he is willing to be the guy that will take the lead on peace. And all of these European leaders, they have to admit that it took President Trump to bring Zelensky and Putin together. Nobody else could do it. President Trump is dedicated to diplomacy and peace, and he's going to accomplish that through dialogue. And you mentioned this earlier. There are a lot of people that are trying to set these summits up for failure. The New York Times talked about how President Trump left Alaska without a deal with Putin. There was no expectation by anybody that there was going to be a peace deal leaving the Alaska summit. Nobody expected there to be a peace deal yesterday. This is going to be a dialogue that's going to have to take place. And President Trump has made this clear between Zelensky and Putin. And if they agree and they come to terms, then there will be a trilateral meeting. And President Trump, as he said this morning on Fox and Friends, will come in and help clean it up. But ultimately, peace is what we need to negotiate. And there's going to be a whole bunch of concessions on both sides. That's just how war works. And there are some people within the foreign policy establishment that want to set these negotiations up for failure because they want to perpetuate this forever war.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that a bit because, again, its territory seems to be what the mainstream media is talking about, that if Ukraine has to give up territory, that this is not a quality peace deal. But, Mark, I mean, you could talk us through this. I mean, obviously, the results of wrapping up a war is that the losing country has to give up land. And so the fact that the mainstream media is angling it as if Ukraine shouldn't, but they've also been saying that Ukraine has been winning this war. What do you make of that?
Well, at the beginning, you had people in the foreign policy establishment that said that Russia, every single soldier would have to be expelled off of Ukrainian territory, including Crimea, which Russia took almost 10 years ago. You know, those were the terms for victory that were outlined at the beginning of this war, which just weren't attainable. It wasn't serious. And it was driven by people that didn't want to see a true resolution. You know, I saw this with the forever wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You had the foreign policy establishment, you had CENTCOM, you had the military industrial complex that never really wanted a resolution. And I alluded to this earlier. When I was in Afghanistan 9 years after 9/11, I saw that there was no plan to win. If you look at the Ukraine-Russia war, Russia was continually gaining ground, not very quickly, but they were gaining ground. And this all was a math problem. It was recently reported by The Economist that said that Russia produces the same amount of munitions in 3 months that it takes the United States of America to do in 1 year. So we weren't going to be able to produce the munitions to arm Ukraine for victory. Russia has more soldiers. They're a larger army. It's just a big logistical mathematical problem. So the mainstream media, they understand that the biggest sticking point in all of this is going to be terrain. It's going to be negotiating land. And you're absolutely right. The Russians have gained territory. There's going to be some give and take on both sides. But this idea that Ukraine's going to take back all of their territory that the Russians fought for just isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I just don't think it's realistic. And Mark, you know, I want to talk about our troops. I think that's really important because, you know, so many times we're just so dismissive about how our veterans are treated in this country. You know, my father is a veteran of the Vietnam War, and he has now opened up to me and detailed what he had to endure when he came back to the United States. And it's really upsetting because, you know, we send our men and our women off, and we don't have a way of kind of bringing them back into society and helping them with critical issues. You know, my dad, when he came back, there was no such thing as PTSD. They never even spoke about it. And they were just kind of all supposed to just jump back into normal life. And no one talked about what happened to them, what they witnessed, what they saw. I know for you, that is a top priority. And so many Americans have learned that lesson. That's why we don't support war anymore. But you are on a mission as the founder of Veteran Action. And you recently posted this, and I wanted to have you explain it. But you're looking for the American people to support the Veterans Access Act. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a very important piece of legislation that will further codify President Trump's historic wins at reforming the VA in his first term. I was able to work with President Trump and members of Congress in 2017 to pass the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act. That would enable our government to hold bad VA employees accountable and be able to protect those good employees who can step forward as whistleblowers to help reform the VA. And then the second big accomplishment for President Trump was the Mission Act, which would provide veterans choice in their health care. And under President Joe Biden and under the VA bureaucrats who are trying to protect their bureaucracy, they've rolled back a lot of those wins. So veterans are having trouble getting good access to quality health care. And I agree with President Trump. I believe that veterans earned the right to choose their own health care. And whether they want to go to the VA, that's great. But the VA, if the VA can't serve them, they should be able to go across the street to a private healthcare provider. And that's why the Veterans Access Act, we are pushing to pass this by Veterans Day. This is an important piece of legislation that will help codify choice. And ultimately, what we want to do is have veterans have the choice in their healthcare for the rest of their lives. And we're seeing Democrats in the Senate, like Ruben Gallego from Arizona and Richard Blumenthal, they're pushing to sunset choice. They were able to successfully insert a provision in the Veterans Access Act to sunset choice after 8 years. So we need, when this goes to the floor, we need to be able to reinsert this language to make it permanent, because veterans deserve choice, not just for the next 8 years, but for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. And Mark, that's really important. You know, I remember this was a couple of years back, my former colleague, Joey Jones, who's a disabled vet, was trying to pick up medication at his local VA, and I believe it was Georgia, and there was no parking, and he had no way of, and he was literally offering people on X just to wait in his car so they wouldn't tow his car when he goes inside, because there was a long wait to pick up these life-saving medications that he needed. And it's just so devastating that things like this are what our veterans have to endure. And so I'm hopeful we'll correct these issues. I know it's something that you are very passionate about. So thank you for all that you do. Thank you for joining us today on American Journey, a journal. I love the fact that you came here today to join us. So thank you, Mark. Guys, give him a follow as well. He is doing incredible, incredible work. We're going to have Mark Mitchell from Rasmussen Reports joining us in just a few moments. I'm excited about this because he's got some very interesting polls out right now. Let me talk you through it because it's very interesting. Right now, the latest Rasmussen Reports poll regarding Russia and Ukraine, 46% think Trump can get Russia and Ukraine to agree to a peace deal. Wouldn't that be lovely? 46. I would say that probably should be a little bit higher. I haven't seen anything that President Trump has set his mind to not actually accomplished. I mean, this is a man who says he's going to do something and he gets it done. So we're going to ask Mark Mitchell about that. He's joining us in just a few moments. And I'm also going to dive into another poll that they recently had about a new census. It's so enraging that we talk about Democrats all the time here, but we talk about Democrats and how they're looking to water down Americans and their votes and their voice by doing this type of foolishness, by allowing illegal aliens to be counted on our census so they could sit there and steal more seats in Washington, D.C. Mark Mitchell joins us now. He's the head pollster of Rasmussen Reports, good friend of mine. He's doing incredible work, asking the American people what they think. And the reason why I don't trust, I actually never had another pollster on my show. He's the only one. You know why? Because Mark Mitchell never gets it wrong. He was right about everything. And he joins us now. Kind of like Alex Jones, Mark. Welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here. Your accuracy rate's higher than the mainstream media, and so we appreciate it. But you have a new poll out right now that I think is very fascinating. 46% of Americans, or just voters, we should say, think Trump can get a Russia-Ukraine peace deal done. I mean, I would think it should be a little bit higher. What about you?
Yeah, the very likely number is low, too. Ukraine is one of those problems. Listen, the Trump base is not exactly as anti-war as Trump is. It's one of those things that I think he's doing because he knows it's the right thing. But the neoconservative roots in the Republican Party go deep. And also, there are things that the mainstream media just has its insidious grip on when it comes to gaslighting. And Ukraine is one of those things. When, you know, Russia invaded Ukraine, there was overwhelming hatred for Russia. There was a lack of sensitivity to the background of what happened there. And people were very concerned about Ukraine and very supportive of giving them, you know, helping them against Russia. Now, over the years, that's kind of gone away. It's winnowed down to where now a majority of Americans think it's a stalemate and they're split on whether we're giving enough or too much. But these numbers are low, and it's, I think, because Zelensky has a higher approval rating than you'd expect because of the mainstream media is effective on some things. And they witnessed the chaos that happened the last time that Zelensky came around. I think a lot of that stuff hit, gave people concerns that maybe this isn't his best issue. Only 19% say he's doing excellent on the war with Ukraine, 20% good. Now, caveats in the middle of August, that's when we took these numbers. And so if Trump comes into the first or second week of September with some kind of success in Ukraine, I think it will be a big number mover. I think he'll get credit for it. And so the grand scheme of things, I don't think this is something that's detracting from him. I think it's just something that's on people's like kind of mental back burner.
Yeah, it's so surprising to me. I mean, I would think that we'd all agree that ending this is a top priority for us here in this country. So we'll see how it unravels, yeah. I guess. I'm pretty sure he's going to lock down a deal within the next couple of days. I mean, there's no way he's going to let this continue to drag on. It's gone on for far too long. And I also think it's really interesting hearing, Vladimir Putin speak out now and have like an unfiltered voice in front of the American media to sit here and say that he never heard from Joe Biden. And if Joe Biden possibly got on a call, maybe this would have never happened. But most importantly, if President Trump was in the White House, like he should have been in 2020, yeah. This wouldn't have happened in the first place. So I think that's really interesting. I also want to talk about the census because this is something that we can't let up on. I mean, Republicans need to be fierce on this battlefront because Democrats have been stealing the voices from the American people for far too long. And I was actually super excited to see that Texas Republicans were all of a sudden putting up a fight by redrawing these congressional maps. And it was exciting to see now Florida's jumping on board. California is saying that they're going to redraw their maps, but it's probably going to happen after the midterms. But it's interesting to see them put up this fight. But your latest poll, 57% of likely U.S. voters approve of Trump's decision to order a new census. Break that one down for us.
Yeah, this is going to be much bigger. We did another back-to-back poll about gerrymandering as well. Basically, I have a hot take on this. I think it's disgusting. I think the idea of legislators picking their voters as opposed to voters picking their legislators is not the way a representative democracy is supposed to work. Now, I guess if it's Republicans' plan B, that's okay because Democrats do it too. But there are states with ridiculous Republican gerrymandering as well. I think it's hard to compare like who's the worst cleanest dirty shirt, let's just put it that way. But what I would love to see is Republicans win the House in November of 26 by doing what they were put there to do, which is pass laws that support Donald Trump's mandate. And voters say that they're not doing that. 60% of Republicans agree that Republicans in Congress are not supporting Trump's mandate well enough. So this is really bad. Only 38% of Trump 2024 voters strongly approve of the Republican Party. That's not good numbers, and that's why the Republicans are losing the generic ballot right now. So if the election were held today, Republicans are down 4, Democrats would probably pick up enough seats to get a majority, and then all hell breaks loose. They're going to have all these show trials. They're going to have all these investigations. They're probably going to impeach again, right? So unfortunately, because Congress is completely non-functioning, it looks like what we're going to have is basically a cold civil war between now and November where Republicans and Democrats just try and outflank each other, and it's gross. So I think these numbers kind of show it's gross. Well, first off, on the census, we didn't specifically say it was because of illegal aliens. We said errors. So 57% approve of a new census, 34% disapprove. So that's something to work with. Like that's popular, right? But then the next question we said, well, President Trump said that illegal immigrants should not be counted. Should the census count illegal immigrants? Only 36% say yes, 52% say no. But a plurality of Democrats, half of Democrats say, oh, yeah, sure. We should count illegal aliens. Certainly. Why would we not? And independents are against it, 57-30. And then as far as gerrymandering, too, I mean, that's people. We gave an example in 2024. Republicans got 45% of the vote in Illinois, but only received 18% of the House seats. Does that kind of result undermine American democracy? 57% yes, 21% say no. That's almost 3-1. So the idea of gerrymandering is disgusting. And so if Republicans win this way, I don't think it's going to be the transformational win that they should have by doing things like passing a one-page bill for voter ID. Like, why would you not do that tomorrow? And they'll cry crocodile tears about the 60-vote filibuster limit in the Senate. Freaking get rid of it. My advice for Democrats is, listen, if the Republicans aren't going to use the nuclear option to give voters what they want, in my opinion, that's a huge opportunity for Democrats to just go in. It's like, you know what? The Republicans had their chance. They didn't do it. Let's get in January of 2027, sign a single-page bill, to mandate E-Verify because Democrats don't like legal immigration either. And then Republicans, you know, they'd be forced to vote for it. Trump would sign the bill. Democrats get a huge win. Republicans could have that now. They're not going to do it. It blows my mind. And so what we're going to see is Gavin Newsom going up against the Trump administration. All of this stuff between, you know, you have Texas threatening to hunt down Democrat legislatures in blue states. And then you have California threatening to undermine its independent redistricting commission in order to take away all Republican representation in a state that has 40% Republican voters. These are not healthy things for a republic.
Yeah, they're not. And we'll see how it unravels a bit because I think so many Americans, Mark, have just been so fed up with the Republican Party and its lack of ambition to actually fight and push back. And so I think they're just looking for a glimpse of hope, but yeah. Texas making these threats, and I know, you know, the Attorney General Ken Paxton is trying his best to go about it through the courts, but again, a lot of these Democrats making their way back into Austin and nothing happening to them, nothing happening at all. And I know, you know, I've spoken to a lot of representatives who were Republican representatives who are saying that they're really upset because it's all empty threats. And I think when it comes to the messaging war, Democrats won that battle in the House. So we'll see how that unravels. But, I mean, you alluded to the GOP, the House GOP, and how a lot of Americans may not be so happy with them. I know we're putting this on you suddenly, but when you see the midterm elections, what does it look like right now for Republicans specifically? Because we're doing all these maneuvers and we're trying to grab more potential districts for Republicans. But the approval ratings are very, very low, it looks like, given the fact that they haven't done anything to codify President Trump's agenda.
Yeah, I mean, the silver lining to the cloud is that Democrats aren't exactly doing better. So Republicans won the House popular vote with 3-point lead in November. And right now they're down 4 points on the generic ballot. So that's a 7-point loss. And that's kind of expected. Like, history tells us that the party in power is going to lose support just because people get in and they get complacent. And quite frankly, the Democrats probably could be leading by more if the Republicans, you know, Trump has done some popular things. And so maybe, you know, the problem is it's so hard to predict. So with a Democrat plus 4 lead, maybe Republicans can claw that back. But then there's all of these exogenous things that I shouldn't have to be able to, like, have to predict as a pollster. Ostensibly, the maps wouldn't change much. The census wouldn't change much. The parity between electioneering and between fundraising wouldn't change much. And so if that was the case, then my shift in numbers would allow me to project, okay, well, you know, we're probably going to see this much of a pickup or this much of a loss. I can't do that. They just declared, you know, didn't they just declare they're going to investigate Act Blue? Act Blue is pouring in like $800 million so far in 2025 in fundraising. And there's so much misinformation out there. Like, for instance, people are saying the Democrat Party has a 19% favorability rating by quoting Quinnipiac. No, it does not. It's got like a 47% favorability rating compared to Republicans 48. So in a divided country with a lot of Democrats in it, they maintain like kind of parity. And then just across the board, there's all these things. It's like, okay, they're saying the Democrats are being out fundraised by the Republicans. Well, no. I mean, again, you have Act Blue is going to dump $3 billion into this race if it's not stopped. And then the other thing is we just really don't know, like in a post-Trump 2.0 world, how many people are really going to turn out for the Republicans. And the Republicans are really probably going to continue to screw things up. Like, this has been the least impressive Congress probably in the history of our country. They've gotten absolutely nothing done. And, you know, the optics are horrible. They go on a month and a half recess. Trump doesn't get his judicial appointments through the Senate. The House didn't help. And then they send a delegation to Israel after, quite frankly, the day that Trump's approval rating really started plunging was in the middle of June. He was at a plus eight, June 13th. What also happened on June 13th? That's when Israel attacked Iran. So that kind of like got his numbers off track right there. And
yeah.
Again, we'll see what happens in September. I think like in a week and a half, we're going to see an entirely different news cycle. And some of that could be Trump wins. Could be Ukraine. It could be positive economic news. Mm-hmm. It could be people paying attention to all these trade deals. And so there is a lot that could happen, but my message is that Republicans are failing. People wanted a new paradigm in Washington, D.C., and they're just not getting it. They're getting actually even worse. It's even swampier and more of the same.
Yeah, and it's not what one would expect. And so I think that's what's so disappointing to the American people. I'm actually on your website right now, RasmussenReports.com, and President Trump's approval rating sits at 47% right now as of today. Mark Mitchell. Thank you for jumping on with us. We greatly appreciate it, especially on this beautiful Tuesday morning. It's always good to get the numbers and help dissect those numbers as well. Mark Mitchell, thank you so much. Folks, Dan Lyman, one of the incredible journalists here at InfoWars, he's jumping on with me in just a few moments. You're not going to want to go anywhere because he's got a great story up ahead.
Right now, for only 7 days, we're having the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. About to break it all down right now. For 1 week only, we have launched the biggest sale ever on collectible bullion, silver coins, and our amazing collectible knives at thealexjonesstore.com. The sale is Blades and Bullion Super Sale. Now, ladies and gentlemen, despite the fact that we're about to sell out of the remaining collectible coins that are limited edition, they'll never be made again, and our incredible World War II updated Spartan trench knife with the skull crusher and the brass knuckles and the 10-inch stainless steel razor-sharp double-edged blade, and this incredible 6-inch battle dagger, despite the fact they're selling out, we are offering all of these products at up to 40% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if I went into a knife shop and I saw these knives for this price, and they weren't even inscribed with 1776 or Tip of the Spear or InfoWars, I would still get them because I'm a knife aficionado and I know the best. And the reason that is because these are the knives I love. These are the knives I think are the best. It took us over a year to get a supplier at a decent price with high quality for this bad boy right here. And it's selling out quick. Got an amazing inscription, Tip of the Spear with the Spartan. On the other side, InfoWars, a true piece of history with the high-tech scabbard sheath that hooks on your belt. Simply amazing. Now look at this bad boy. It goes great in your purse, great in your car, great on your side. High-tech sheath. Doesn't come out, but easily. There's a fallout, but easily pulls out. This won't run out of bullets. This will defend you and your family. Let's grab a 1776 on one side, collectible, limited edition, Alex Jones signature on the other side. And it comes with this collectible gift case, makes an amazing gift as well. And then, as I was mentioning, look at these coins. There are only a few hundred left of each one of these. Only 5,000 were made of each. You've got, due to popular demand, Alex Jones on one side, InfoWars on the other. Then you've got one of my favorites, Paul Revere, his Midnight Ride, Our Lives, Our Fortune, and Our Honor, Declaration of Independence on the other. Then you've got the Tip of the Spear Spartan helmet and the Gadsden flag snake with the spear through the middle, Tip of the Spear. And then this one, they hold back only a few hundred of these. Even though these were available anymore, Trump, fight, 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 battle for the Republic, commemorating President Trump. All four of these coins are about to sell out. You can get them discounted individually or even bigger discount when you get all four together. Right now, part of the Blades and Bullion Super Sale. These are collectible. These are great prices. This knife right here sells for $100 in stores. We bought 5,000 of them. They're almost sold out. But I sell them to you for $78, and it funds the operation. Same thing with this. This knife sells all day for $150 in stores. We bought a whole bunch of them. So it's massively discounted to you. And you talk about defending yourself and your family. This is it. And you're also funding the Tip of the Spear in the information war while you do this, so you cannot lose. The only way you fail is not taking action at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get the Ultra Red Thinly Blue, get the very best Irish Sea Moss, the very best Shilajit, the very best turmeric. It's all there, and it funds this operation. I cannot do this without you. I try to bring you really cool things that I think are amazing. The best supplements, you name it. So you buy it, you get it, you love it. It empowers you, and you're happy with what you did. You continue to support us. I want a long-term relationship with you. I want to thank those who have supported the broadcast. I want to encourage those of you who have been on the fence to take action now, get amazing products, and keep us on the air. Be part of history. Thank you so much.
tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to The American Journal. I am Brianna Morello, filling in for my good friend, Mr. Harrison Smith. In case you guys didn't know, I guess I should say weekly now, podcast, and it's actually available on band.video as well. So make sure you give that a follow. We talk about everything the corporate media doesn't want you talking about. I also have a Saturday morning show on InfoWars. It's called Good Morning InfoWars. We are live every single Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. Put it on your clock. Put it on your schedule. Whatever you do, I don't know what you do these days. Put it on your schedule. Do it now. Don't forget about it because it's an incredible show. We often have my next guest on breaking down all the headlines for us, and everyone else who wants to beat the mainstream media narrative joins me. The fast-paced news show, 10 a.m. Eastern time, I should say. It's kind of strange that we're in Central time for me to go back and forth. 10 a.m. Eastern time on InfoWars. You got to tune in. Good morning, InfoWars. But my next guest has a lot to talk about. He's been working on some incredible pieces over at InfoWars.com. His name is Mr. Dan Lyman, and he joins the show now because restaurant managers in Washington, D.C. are just completely shocked that the streets are a little bit safer, and it makes for a much better environment in Washington, D.C. Dan Lyman joining us today. Dan, you've got a great piece up right now on InfoWars.com. The streets are quiet, is what one restaurant manager is saying. I was just in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, I know it's the morning time, so I don't want to have to barf up their breakfast, but when I was in D.C., it was completely vile. There was a individual who was defecating in the street right in front of the restaurant, and it wasn't something that I'd ever want to go back to. But now that President Trump has made this a top priority, I'm kind of on board that I might plan another trip to D.C. Let's talk about this latest story. What's going on with restaurant managers who are now seeing the light?
Yeah, great to be with you, Brianna, and great to see you in the big chair at HQ. Welcome to the team, of course. Yeah, so we've been tracking the developments in D.C. before and after the announcement of the historic crackdown last week on crime and vagrancy and filth and illegal aliens and, of course, graffiti, which we'll get into. And so actually last weekend, right before President Trump made the big announcement on Monday, there was a shooting in the upscale, up-and-coming neighborhood of Navy Yard, where a lot of administration officials live and other young professionals, and where families take their children to go to the parks and to go to different events. And, of course, there's baseball games there, professional baseball. So this neighborhood is actually quite well-known for that reason. It's also well-known because on a regular basis, any number of hundreds, dozens, 200, 300 youths, teens will swarm this area. It's a very nice area, and they go to wreak havoc. They go to terrorize the local residents and the visitors there. And the D.C. police kind of seemed powerless to stop it. They were staged and ready for this gathering, of course, because these things are organized on social media in many cases. So they knew it was coming. Also, it's a regular event in Navy Yard. And while our reporter was on the ground, our White House correspondent, he was on the ground just covering the general chaos in the neighborhood. There was a shooting just a few feet away from him. And this was on Saturday night, two Saturdays ago. And total pandemonium broke out. We had the only video of that entire incident, the arrest, the recovery of the firearm. And it was just, it was bedlam. What we learned on Monday, which made sense because of what we saw in response to the shooting immediately afterwards, was that federal agents were already being deployed to the streets of D.C. ahead of the announcement in order to start regaining control of the nation's capital. And so we actually saw that. We saw ATF, HSI, DHS agents were all participating in restoring order after this shooting. And so this was really interesting leading into the big conversation that started on Monday when President Trump and other top administration officials announced that it's time to clean up D.C. They're going to do it very quickly. They're going to start rounding up criminals. They, I believe, temporarily federalized the D.C. Metro Police. I think they've been given control back to the D.C. police. However, they are operating under the direction and the advice of the DOJ at this point. And so in the last week, we've kind of been watching how this plays out. And so our White House correspondent has been going out every night to some of the rougher neighborhoods in D.C. We actually did a ride-along earlier this year in a neighborhood called Anacostia, where you can see all this footage that's rolling right here. Anacostia is one of the more depressed, violent, dangerous neighborhoods in D.C. It's just a few miles from the White House. And what we witnessed on the ground there was heartbreaking, tragic, and truly chilling to see that this could be going on at the center of power effectively for the world. D.C. is, you know, the center of the most powerful nation on the planet, and thusly kind of translates to being the most powerful city on the planet in many ways. And it's just amazing to see the decay, the danger, the filth that is all surrounding our center of power, the wheels of power. And of course, there have been some other high-profile incidents. We had a congressional intern who was gunned down in D.C. Last month or the month before. We've seen the attack on Big Balls, of course, when he tried to defend a woman from a carjacking, and he was brutally beaten. So the administration, as soon as they came into office, was talking about resecuring and beautifying the nation's capital, but they really launched that effort last week. National Guard has been deployed to the streets. Our White House correspondent has actually been watching them staging early in the operation last week in Anacostia, as I mentioned, and other neighborhoods. And of course, a major presence over at Union Station, which we've actually been reporting on for years as well, the dangers at Union Station and just the total chaos. And so these are people that are commuting in and out of D.C. for work and around the city, and they have to pass through people sleeping on the ground, people overdosing on drugs, crimes, people riding recklessly on dirt bikes and scooters. So it's just been crazy what's been going on in the nation's capital in recent years. We actually saw that carjackings exploded during COVID. From 2022 to 2023, they went up from 500, which was already a shocking statistic, to nearly 1,000 in 2023. And they miraculously dropped the following year to around 500 again. Of course, we have since learned that the D.C. Metro Police have been cooking the books, at least some of the folks over there. So really, we can't take their figures at face value, but we can say at least 500 carjackings in a city, that's over one a day, many times committed by youths, teens, underage criminals in the nation's capital. It's pretty crazy. So we are leading now into this video that we published over the weekend. This video now has more than 500,000 views. We had various Trump administration officials actually sharing this video because it was poignant. It really got to the heart of the matter. We went into Anacostia. We went to a popular restaurant there. It's a barbecue joint. And we talked to one of the managers, Sean McWhirter. He's a longtime D.C. local. And Sean said that immediately the streets have quieted down in Anacostia. That, of course, does not mean that everything's perfectly safe. We've had multiple shootings in the neighborhood just in the last few days alone. However, things are getting a little bit better. Excuse me. And his optimism is that if the federal government works in the interest of the people and actually focuses on cracking down on crime and vagrancy, that the neighborhoods will become calmer again. He talked about them opening up the way that they used to be, that children can once again play in the streets, that people can feel comfortable going out to eat, perhaps. For instance, Anacostia, they have very few restaurants at all. This is one of the outliers. It's a very popular place, but people just don't feel safe going out to eat. And this guy actually talked about how very frequently they'll have youths, juveniles, these same criminals that are terrorizing local residents. They'll come in ski masks looking for food, and he said it just puts the whole place on edge. But he said in the last few days, things are really starting to calm down. He's very optimistic about the direction, and if this continues, then they could restore order to the city and a semblance of decency as well.
Yeah, Dan, I actually wanted to talk about that a bit because we have a soundbite that I think is laughable from L.A. Mayor Karen Bass. We're going to play that in just a second. I wanted to talk a little bit about the crime stats, though, because I look at Attorney General Pam Bondi, and she posted that just this weekend alone, there were 137 arrests in the D.C. area, 21 of those arrests for illegal firearms. There have been a total of nearly 400 arrests, and they're not slowing down anytime soon to their commitment of making D.C. safe again. But, you know, one would think that Democrats would want to celebrate that because safety should be on the top of every American's priority, but they're not very happy about that. In fact, L.A. Mayor Karen Bass, who is an absolute train wreck of a mayor for the city of Los Angeles, decided to come out and do a little race baiting the other day. Take a listen.
I'm very concerned about that. And not only that, I'm concerned about the way he is rolling that out in Washington, D.C., which is essentially calling, essentially going after young black and brown youth. in Washington, D.C., imposing a curfew, saying that if they violate the curfew, the parents could be charged $500, saying that the kids could be detained and arrested. We've tried those policies before. They do not work. And it's my understanding that crime was going down in Washington, D.C. So what is the purpose of this?
Democrats always altering their crime statistics. I come from a cesspool known as New York, and I know that they sat there and aggressively altered their crime stats because they didn't want it to look like criminal justice reform was actually a criminal bill of rights. And so they did their very best to make sure victims didn't come forward and file police reports. And we're seeing it in D.C. too. And we're seeing that Democrats are using that as their common talking point. But anyone who walks around Washington, D.C. knows that that's not the case. And then she's using the race issue, saying that they're arresting black and Hispanic youth. The reality is, though, is they're not going based on race. They're going based on who's actually committing the crimes. So Karen Bass might actually be onto something, isn't she?
Well, of course, this is a tacit admission that the vast majority of violent crimes committed in the D.C. area and also in most major cities across the country are committed by minorities. They're committed by primarily black males and also Hispanic males, with a very, very small share for white suspects. And so that's honestly just that's what's happening. And if people don't want to talk about that, if people are scared of that reality, I would encourage them to go to the news feed, the timeline of virtually any major police department in the United States, and look at all the suspects that they're looking for, the video footage, the photographs that they release of the suspects. There is a common thread tying them all together. And anyone who wants to live in denial about that, I mean, that's their problem. But clearly, Karen Bass knows exactly what's going on, and she's trying to gaslight the public and also to claim that crime is going down, which is a talking point we're hearing from Democrats about the nation at large. And we know that that's not the case. We know that crime has been an issue in our cities for many years, but it has totally spiraled out of control since the riots in the name of St. Floyd and also the breakdown of law and order during COVID. And that has continued onward into the current era. And in my opinion, the only response to this is swift, relentless crackdown on these criminals, regardless of what they look like. And that's just what's got to happen. And it's got to start in D.C. because the administration has unique powers there. But they need to figure out a way to roll this out nationwide, because we've seen Democrats can't be trusted with control of our cities. And that just something has to change. And regardless of what that looks like or how much they cry about it or how much the media complains about it, it just needs to happen, because the American people are crying out for this. Whether they live in the cities or they're watching what's going on in the cities, they work in the cities, they know something is terribly wrong in this country when our nation's capital has a higher murder rate than third world countries, higher than Baghdad, higher than Peru, higher than countries across the world, certainly higher than El Salvador at this point. And so a page can be taken out of the Bukele book in terms of how to mitigate this disaster of our American cities. And, you know, as someone who has lived all over the world, who has lived for long periods in Europe as well and spent time traveling over there, you go to other cities, perhaps in some of the more secure countries like Hungary and Poland, Estonia, Iceland, and you see that this is very, very little crime, and the cities over there are just a totally different vibe, a totally different flavor than what goes on in our cities here. And something needs to change dramatically very soon.
Yeah, well, something will change dramatically. I think the American people are seeing how easy it is to get rid of crime from their neighborhoods. And you're going to watch major cities sit back and watch what's happening in D.C. And they're going to want all in on this. And I think that's going to hold Democrats, hopefully, their feet to the fire. I mean, and when I say that, I already think they're demons. So I don't know if they really can get their feet held to the fire. But the reality is these people are evil. And the fact that they still force their constituents to live amongst high violent criminals is absolutely absurd. And I want to talk more about that because, you know, over on Infowars.com, you've posted so many incredible stories. And there's one that you just recently posted regarding an Uber passenger being sexually assaulted by an illegal alien driver in Texas. And I think this is interesting because, you know, there was recently a report, and I actually just tweeted about it, I think it was last week. And it was in regards to Uber in a lawsuit being forced to have to come forward and to talk about sexual assaults regarding their drivers. If you haven't taken an Uber in a while, and I hope you haven't, you'll notice that the names just are not, they're foreigners. They're foreigners. And so to see that this is allegedly a non-U.S. citizen who is being accused of sexual assault. It doesn't strike me as something that I haven't seen before regarding Uber. But ultimately, Uber was forced the other day to...
Was forced the other day to admit
that they faced over 400,000 complaints regarding sexual assault or misconducts against their drivers here in the United States. Now, that's from 2017 to 2022. Now, Uber says that those claims are only like 0.006% of the total trips that they've done so far in the U.S. So they said it's a very limited issue, but they only came forward and publicly reported about a little over 12,000 of those cases. So again, we're talking about 400,000 is what they were forced to admit in court compared to the 12,000 that they admitted publicly before being sued for this. But there seems to be a massive issue here, not just Uber, but just hiring illegal aliens and thinking that the American people are allowed to just accept this. You know, when I take an Uber, when I take a Lyft, I'm expecting that the driver is going to take me home safely. And I felt, as just as a female, I felt uncomfortable several times in these Uber cars and Lyft as well. So break this story down for us, because this is an ongoing issue.
Yes, it is. And it's actually an international issue with Uber, but we'll get into that in a sec. Of course, in this story, this was a 21-year-old woman who summoned an Uber. She was at a bar on an island near Galveston, Texas, out with her friends, and she was about half an hour from home approximately. And so she called a car and apparently was probably intoxicated. And during the drive home, her family was actually, she was heading home to her parents' house, and her family was tracking just her ride home to make sure that she was safe. I believe it was around 2 or 3 in the morning. And eventually the Uber driver signaled that the ride had ended. They hit, you know, whatever button they do to say the ride has been completed. Well, the family realized that their daughter wasn't home. So they knew something was amiss, and they used another app, probably Find My iPhone or something like that, to determine her location. And she actually was nearby in an empty parking lot in the vehicle still, sitting in the front seat. And she, apparently her shorts were unbuttoned, and the driver told the parents that she had fallen asleep in the vehicle. He had no explanation apparently for why they were sitting in an empty parking lot. Her memory was that he had been reaching down into her pants. And so anyways, the family, pulled a girl out of the car. They filed a police report, and this guy, this actually happened in June, if I'm not mistaken. So he's been on the loose for a while, but they finally caught him. And it turns out he is a Lebanese illegal who entered the U.S. during the Biden era and then overstayed a visa since 2022 and has been driving for Uber, presumably for a while now. I don't know if he's been driving under his own name or if he's been driving under the name of someone else, because we've seen in many cases that these illegal alien drivers will pay to use someone else's account and then they'll give them a cut in order to operate that account. It works the same way with Uber Eats deliveries and all that. And so that's why you see in our cities now, we see just hordes and hordes of strange foreign men on mopeds driving around the city with Uber Eats bags. But this, like I said, is an international issue. Uber in many ways has been great for those of us who don't want to deal with taxis, who want to just call a car on demand. Especially if you're a male, you're probably at much lower risk than a lone female getting into these vehicles. But if you go to other countries, for instance, you call an Uber in Germany, there is a very high likelihood that your driver is either going to be from Iraq or Eritrea or Somalia, perhaps. The vast majority of drivers there are foreign migrants. And then interestingly enough, even long before the conflict in Ukraine, if you called an Uber in Poland, you would typically get a Ukrainian driver. So it just across the board is that foreign labor is being used in many cases to drive these Uber cars. And as we've seen, a lot of times they're not even doing so legitimately. And so it's a huge concern, and Uber really needs to get a handle on this. And I think the administration needs to launch a full scale investigation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they do. And I remember there was a video yesterday actually circulating online. I think it was Washington, D.C. There was someone, as you described, an Uber driver an Uber Eats individual who was, they had the backpack and everything, and ICE had pulled them over, and they were just riding their bicycle around. And for, well, I don't know if this person was legal or not, but they were arrested and apprehended and taken in. But it's just so strange to see how this all unravels. And for folks at home right now, if you have like a daughter, if you have your wife, you gotta keep pushing for them to check the license plates before they get into any of these cars. You know, I was in Ohio doing a report in Ohio, and I just happened to know that Ohio is massive for human trafficking. And so when I was getting into the vehicle of one of these cars, I actually, before I got in, and this is the New Yorker in me, I checked the license plate, and the license plate didn't match the app, and the driver was very persistent on me getting inside anyways. No, don't worry. I did report it to, I believe it was either Lyft or Uber, I don't remember the exact company, but they did handle it very, very quickly, and they apologized, and that person was immediately booted from the app. But this is an ongoing issue, and we have to pay attention. I mean, that's just the harsh reality. And there was a story that I saw a couple of months back as well. Texas has a massive problem when it comes to all of this, because this story took place in Dallas. And I'm watching this news report, and it's just gut-wrenching to watch this woman who had too many drinks. We've probably all been there before, though. And she was struggling to get back into her house. And then allegedly this Lyft driver is, and I don't know what his immigration status is. I don't know if he's a U.S. citizen, but he's accused of bringing her back into her house. And he's obviously fondling her through this process until a neighbor intercepts and steps in. We'll have that in just a moment. But it's just, it's an ongoing issue with these people. And it's just so upsetting because, you know, you don't want people drinking and driving. You don't. You want them to be able to get into a vehicle and be able to operate and a safe way home. I mean, not operate a vehicle, but for somebody else to operate the vehicle and take them home safely. And so when we see things like this, it's just gut-wrenching, and it's really difficult to wrap our minds around. We could just show the video, guys, if you would like, because I know we're limited on time here, but it's an ongoing issue. I mean, people have to pay attention. We have to warn our loved ones to pay attention to this issue, because this could be anyone. This could be anyone. I've been very outspoken about this, and in a few minutes, I'm going to, okay, let's go straight to the clip, and then I'll get your reaction on the other side.
She needed to get home from a girl's night out, so she took a rideshare. Never in a million years thinking something this horrifying would happen. The driver got her home, but she says he then groped her on the front porch. Now the woman is speaking with our Anne Mercogliano, and we warn you, the video is upsetting.
Okay.
It's a video that will leave you outraged.
Right here.
A rideshare driver appears to be groping his passenger's breasts as he helps her to her front door. Her purse is draped around her neck, and you can hear her dog barking inside her house as she slurs her words.
Are you an Uber driver?
He put his hands around her waist.
What company?
Oh, Lyft. Yes, yeah. I want to make sure you get home safely.
Now the woman who says she was groped is speaking out.
It's disgusting. I was so intoxicated. I was falling over. And to know that
Dan, this shouldn't be happening in the first place. And this is happening to women all over the country. But as you see, this guy gutsy. I mean, everyone has a Ring doorbell camera, and the neighbor is the one who intercepts and stops him from going inside of her home, because obviously she's heavily intoxicated. Your reaction to the video? Lyft did say, though, in fairness, that they did handle this issue, and it's a serious issue, and this driver is no longer with the company. But just your reaction.
Disgusting. I mean, I'm going to guess that he's doesn't belong in our country whatsoever, no matter what his paperwork looks like. And yet, like you said, this is a common occurrence. We actually covered a story this summer as well. It was an Uber Eats delivery driver, if I'm not mistaken, one of the delivery services. And he turned up to a woman's residence in Boston, sanctuary city, of course, and was operating under someone else's account. And ended up making his way into the house. He said he was very cold. He asked the lady if she could let him in to warm up real quick while he waited for a call or something like that. And he ended up raping her in her apartment for quite a while. And that was also caught on, at least the audio was caught on camera. This is a lesson to everyone, but especially women in this country. Do not take things for granted. Don't get as intoxicated as this lady did if you're not going to be going home with company. Probably don't get in that intoxicated, period. Yeah. But, you know, people need to stop being naive about what's going on in this country. And we can blame Democrat officials and the mainstream media for pushing the narrative that the country is becoming a safer place, because gullible people are going to believe that, mm-hmm. and they're going to have their guard down, and we can't have that happening at all.
No, we can't. We can't. Dan Lamon, you're doing incredible work over at Infowars.com. I highly recommend everyone head on over there. Take a look. You have amazing stories up as always, and you also have an incredible X feed. So I highly recommend you all give Dan a follow. Thanks for joining me, Dan. All right, lots happening. We're waiting to hear from Senator Tommy Tuberville, who's actually going to be joining me in just a few moments to talk more about D.C. crime, plus his reaction regarding Zelensky at the White House. Peace is on our mind. Does Tuberville agree? We'll ask Coach soon.
you were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and you, what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy, he's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well.
And yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans, and we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule. It should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS, Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
American Journal. I am Brianna Morello, filling in for Harrison Smith on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Thank you for sticking with us. Now, like I told you, in just a couple of minutes, we're going to have Senator Tommy Tuberville joining the program. Got a lot to talk about. We're looking forward to just that. Plus, Alex Rosen joining us in studio. I've got a lot to talk about with him because the Epstein files, there's more there, thanks to Congressman James Comer, who's going to be joining us in just, well, we're going to be talking about him, but Alex Rose is going to be joining us in studio. Plus, Mel Kay, host of the Mel Kay Show, is joining us as well in the next hour. Oh, we got a lot to talk about, a lot going on. You know, I love catching up with my girl Mel Kay. She's out there digging through all of the government documents that they don't want you to look at. And so she's got a lot to discuss, especially in regards to the FBI. Many of you guys know the Attorney General of Missouri is now stepping away from that role and shifting over as the co-deputy director. And I think it's quite interesting. We're going to see how that works out. We have the senator actually available right now. We could take 2 minutes with him and then jump to commercial break. But we'll start with Senator Tommy Tuberville joining the show. Welcome, sir, to the program. I know you're super busy, and it's good to have you on. I wanted to get your reaction because we were just talking about Washington, D.C., and how President Trump is doing an incredible job at making D.C. safer. Your reaction?
Thank you. Well, Brianna, I've been up here 5 years, and I've never seen a place so unsafe when it should be the icon, the bright star of our country. Homeless, drugs, protesters standing out in the streets, things that are just absolutely going wrong. President Trump's doing exactly what is right. We had a 21-year-old intern that was shot right outside the White House not too long ago. I think he was from Kansas. Just devastating. But we have more murders up here. We have more robberies and more car thefts. We have kids running around the streets and motorcycles that nobody gives them any kind of tickets. So it's time. It's time to take back not just D.C., but all of our cities across the country, San Francisco, Chicago, and all of our country. We have to have safe neighborhoods, and President Trump's on the right track.
Yeah, and I think it's really important because everyone wants a safer neighborhood. I don't understand why the left is pushing back on all of this. We're watching as, you know, Democrats are going after President Trump. They're altering their crime stats in D.C., so it doesn't look like crime is an issue. But, sir, you've been there. You know, I was just there a couple of weeks ago. I know, actually, we met in person. I know that crime is an issue there. You know, I was followed by two homeless people while simply just trying to walk to the nail salon. And as a woman, it just makes you feel extremely unsafe. But any American, it makes you feel extremely unsafe. But they're still bashing him for this. We've got about 90 seconds, sir. Your reaction to the media still going after him, even though he's making D.C. safe again.
Well, they have nothing to go on, Brianna. All they want to do is fight back against the rule of law. I've been approached whether walking or jogging on the National Mall. People, you know, they try to bully you. And again, we don't need that. We have tourism here as one of our biggest assets in terms of people coming to this city. But again, the Democratic Party, a lot of them are corrupt. They are trying any way possible to regain power. If they get power back, our country is doomed. And I think people are starting to recognize just what President Trump is doing, the progress he's making, not just in one or two areas, but all areas across our country and the world, that he's doing the right thing. The number one thing was obviously the mass immigration coming across. Europe is gone. All these leaders that are here in Washington, D.C., Brianna, are talking with President Trump. They're looking for some type of leadership. President Trump's given it to them. They have ruined their own countries, and so they can't make any of these decisions for Ukraine because they need Ukraine to continue to fighting to help their economies. But thanks for President Trump trying to do something and trying to get these people going in the right direction. But it is not just a D.C. problem or a state problem or a country problem. It's a world problem. All these problems are world problems, and thank God for President Trump.
Thank God for President Trump. Coach, stay on the line with us. I want to get your reaction, go a little bit more in depth on the meetings yesterday at the White House, because I think it's very important that we talk peace between Russia and Ukraine. So stick with us. We'll be right back. He's a badass.
Step right up, folks. Please don't stall. Mad scientist Alex has got a cure for y'all. With a bloop, 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 and a fizz so fine, it'll pep your step and sharpen your mind. In a clean white lab with a patriotic grin, he's mixing up the freedom. Come and drink it on in. Sold on the site where the good times hum at alexjonesstore.com. Yes, that's the one. Now he's got a treat that'll make you skip. Shit, legit gummies for that power trip. Pop one in and you'll feel brand new. Strong like a bull and make your brain flex too. He's got a treat that'll make you skip. Shilajit gummies for the power.
Order Shilajit gummies at the website below.
19th in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, everyone. So American Journal, I'm filling in for Harrison Smith today, and I'm also joined by my favorite Senator Tommy Tuberville is joining us straight from Washington, D.C. today. Sir, I wanted your reaction because yesterday was an incredible day. We saw President Trump attempting to negotiate peace between Zelensky with all the European leaders in the room, and it's something we've never seen before. So just your overall view of what's happening right now, because although some of those European leaders want to kind of drag on the peace talks, President Trump's sitting here and saying, no, we're going to save lives, and we're going to make this a top priority, and we're going to come to the table and come to an agreement very, very soon. Your reaction?
Well, you're exactly right. Thanks for President Trump leadership. There's no leadership in this city, and President Trump has finally brought leadership back. This war should have ended about 3 years ago, and they tried to end it in Istanbul, Turkey, but Joe Biden and Boris Johnson pulled the plug and told Zelensky, "You'll not be protected if you pull out of this." So Europe needs this war for some reason. They think they have to fight it for their economy. But this is not our war. This is not a NATO country in Ukraine. We have the American taxpayers, Brianna, has given over $300 billion to Ukraine to fight this war. I've not voted for a dime. We shouldn't have done it. We can't afford it. The Europeans have only given $100 billion. And so $300 billion to $100 billion doesn't make a lot of sense. So it was great President Trump brings them here. I'd have loved to have been behind the walls with the closed meetings of what was going on, because most of these people have ruined their own countries already because of mass immigration coming in. But President Trump is trying to talk some sense into them. We have no skin in this game other than the $300 billion. Everybody says, well, Russia's going to take over the world. Russia can't make 15 miles of advancement in 3 years in Ukraine. They're not a problem for us. The problem for us is getting back and make America first again, letting everybody know that, but running China away from Russia. If Russia and China combine, which Biden is forced to happen in the last 3 years, we're going to have major problems in this country, because they will form a conglomerate that I don't think anybody can beat.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we need to push as much as we can for peace. Sir, I wanted to ask you as well. I know, Coach, you know, you just happened to mention all these countries taking in individuals. And, you know, we learned last week that we've been taking in, it appears that we've been taking in Gaza refugees. And now, obviously, the Secretary of State, Mark Rubio, cutting that off, and he's going to try to do some more digging into that. But it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that the administration didn't know that was going on. What are your thoughts after seeing the footage that was released last week about them coming into our country?
Yeah, Brianna, that's been happening ever since this started October the 7th, a couple of years ago. They've been taking people out, supposedly sick or kids and things like that. And listen, we're all for immigration. We're not for bringing people here in this country, number one, that's not supposed to be, that are not approved by the American people. You've got people making decisions behind the scenes here in D.C. that have nothing to do with leadership. It's just that's what they want to happen, mostly Democrats, because they need immigration to win power back in this country. So thank goodness we're stopping, Marco Rubio stopping these visas. You know, I've got a bill on the floor that's called the Student Visa Integrity Act that I went to a college a few months ago. They graduated 40 Chinese and 15 Iranians in engineering in our country, and they're going back home, and we're going to end up having to lose probably our young men and women in some kind of war because we have given all of our secrets up. We have no sense of patriotism in this country anymore. People do it for money, and that needs to stop. And that's the reason we need to get this legislation passed, where if you're from Iran or China, hey, don't even think about coming here. We don't want you here. We're not going to educate your kids unless you start doing the right things across this world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think extending student visas to the Chinese is I think it's treason at this point, because we know they're not coming here to study. We know that they're coming here and spying, because they have no option. They're spying on our country for the CCP, and that needs to end. I got to thank you, Senator Tommy Tuberville, for joining us today. Coach, I know you're a very busy man, so we appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you as well, sir. All right, folks, we learned yesterday that the DOJ is allegedly cooperating with Congress in regards to those Epstein files that we've all been waiting for. Of course, James Comey saying that they are working with him. Take a listen.
Appreciate everybody being here today. We're very excited. This will be our first deposition.
Comer.
In our bipartisan investigation into the entire Epstein Island saga. So we've got a lot of questions for former Attorney General Barr. I appreciate his willingness to come in. Hopefully this will be the first of many. I'll answer your question.
You set a deadline for tomorrow for DOJ to release the unredacted full Epstein file. Do you expect them to deliver on that?
Well, we're having really good conversations. You have to understand how many, you can imagine how many documents there are
I think that we're going to have the, I think we'll receive the documents very soon. They're compiling everything together. I think we're working together in a good faith effort, and everything's coming along. I expect to receive the documents very, very soon.
Is that their explanation, though, that there's just so many documents that they can't meet your deadline?
Well, we always get that explanation every investigation we've done in the 2.5 years I've been here. But I think that I'm confident we're going to get the documents.
Are there other topics you're hoping to ask them about as well, or just Epstein and Maxwell?
Well, the subpoena was just for Epstein. There are some other things that I'm curious about. So we'll see how it goes. But obviously the purpose of this deposition is on Epstein. And when we learn more, I'll be happy.
All right, that was James Comer. I've got Comey on my mind after watching that horrific Taylor Swift video. But joining me now to react, Mr. Alex Rosen of Predator Poacher joining me in studio. Welcome, sir. Thanks for jumping on with me today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Comer over here telling us that they're working with the DOJ. Now, I believe Comer, it's the DOJ where I kind of, it's a little bit of a gray area. What's your thoughts?
No, I think they're all in on it. I think it's all scripted and fake. I don't think the Epstein files are ever going to be released. I think I've been hearing 2 more weeks for the past 6 months, and I think they're going to keep saying 2 more weeks or 14 days. Until this term's over, I don't think either, I don't think they're planning on releasing anything. I think, they're all friends. I think there's certain things that all politicians from all sides agree to just not talk about or touch. And I think that's one of those subjects, you know. I hope I'm proven wrong, but it's just stalling and procrastinating. And I have zero faith in any of them releasing anything with that.
Okay. So Alex, I actually want your take on this because you're not partisan, right? You don't really follow along.
I'm super right wing.
Well, here's my thing, right? So everyone's saying that the Trump administration is suppressing this because they think the left says this, that they think that President Trump is somehow wrapped up into the Epstein files. But we actually heard that yesterday AG Bill Barr told the committee, testified under oath, saying that there's nothing in there that would incriminate or even link President Trump to the Epstein files. And if there were anything, we know that Joe Biden and the Barack Obama regime would have definitely outed them by now. Your reaction?
Well, you know, to that, I would say who was president before Joe Biden? It was Donald Trump. And even if he's not in the, first of all, I don't trust Bill Barr on anything he says. I mean, you know, most of the time we don't trust him. Now we do trust him when he says this. It doesn't make any sense. And, you know, even if Trump isn't on there, which I hope he's not, I would want a president who's on those files. His donors could be, you know, and they didn't say anything about his donors. So I think regardless whether he's on them or not, so people on there are being protected by this administration. I think that's a massive, massive problem. And, you know, of course, Joe Biden, the admin, protected them too. And the reason I guess people weren't so loud about it during Joe Biden is because nobody has an expectation of the Biden administration to do anything. We all know they're corrupt. So it's kind of heartbreaking when this administration that's supposed to be transparent has all the influencers here with the files just kind of like procrastinates over and over again. I don't know what the holdup is.
Yeah, Chad Prather also still angry about that because we just had him on the show. At the beginning of the show, angry that they used his face, Pam Bondi used him, and you know, he tried his best to tell everyone that he had no idea this was happening until it was too late. I can't trust anything that happens right now. I want your take too on the shakeup right now at the FBI because, you know, you have attempted, I know this because I've actually worked with you on this because you were arrested in Missouri, but now we have the Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, who is now going to be jumping on as a title I've never heard before, but the co-deputy director of the FBI. Again, does this bring you any hope that all the deep state hacks are going to be finally arrested?
No, I don't know. I don't really know him too well. I don't really know him at all, actually. I've never talked to him. He's never really even commented on my Missouri case. But I don't know. It feels like expanding the federal government to drain the swamp is kind of counterintuitive and just doesn't really make too much sense. But I hope so. I mean, that's all I can say to that.
Yeah, let's talk about Texas because we obviously know Texas quite well. We have an AG race that's going to get very heated soon, the primary specifically. And I know you've been working with one of the candidates, Aaron Wrights. Yesterday, you guys were out catching predators. So it was very, very interesting to see, especially because he's potentially going to be the GOP nomination. I mean, Texans here really like this guy a lot. What was it like yesterday being on the ground with him?
Man, so Aaron Wrights has done 2 busts with us. One of them is already arrested and charged. The other one, it's a pending investigation. We did one Round Rock 2 days ago, one in San Antonio, I guess this morning, technically. He's been tremendous, you know. I would absolutely endorse voting for him. I'm going to vote for him in 2026. Hmm. I mean, he genuinely cares about getting these pedos off the street, and he's told me things like off camera. We've had a lot of conversations about how he plans on making this happen, and I'm really excited about it. I mean, you know, the fact that, and he's not just doing it for a photo op either. I mean, this guy's helping me interview the predators. He's holding my live stream. I mean, I'm telling this future attorney general, hey man, can you hold my live stream? It's like, absolutely. I mean, he is enthusiastic about it, and I've never seen this from a politician before, and I hate to say this, but I actually have faith in this one politician. I like it.
It's strange because when I was actually doing flood relief down in Texas, he was actually the only person who reached out to me and offered to assist as well. And so again, it's not something that you would expect. And again, I try not to endorse individuals, but I mean, my friend Gunther Eagleman also coming out and backing him. You're backing him now, which it blows my mind because again, you usually stay out of these things, but again, he is someone who is aggressively looking to help individuals like yourself go out there and catch these predators. But there's very limited AGs who would even want to do that, or even they say they want to do it, but they actually don't have the actions to back it. What on a state level should states be doing now? Their attorney generals claim that they want to catch predators. What can they actually be doing?
Well, you know, our group personally, we've caught, I think, 140 something predators this year, and over 80 or 90 of them have already been arrested. And I mean, the attorney generals, the DAs listen to them. Like when we were in South Carolina, we heard for years, oh, well, the attorney general doesn't want these cases prosecuted. And eventually we met with Alan Wilson. We, you know, kind of aired out our grievances. And now he's saying, well, it's not my policy. And you know, now South Carolina's kind of picking up our cases. So the attorney general could absolutely make calls to DAs and say, hey, we want this stuff prosecuted, and they could take up the cases themselves. So having someone like Aaron Wright in there, and I think Ken Paxton's done a good job too, but having someone like Aaron Wright in there, basically telling these DAs, hey, we want this stuff prosecuted, and, you know, coming up with ways to directly work with us, have our input on things, I mean, that's awesome. And I sincerely believe he's going to follow through with that. I mean, it's legit.
Yeah, I want to actually talk about the catch yesterday that Aaron was with you on. Now, we don't have the audio. We just have the video, but this guy you told me was running from you. Give us a little bit of the backdrop here.
Yeah, so we caught two yesterday, and Aaron came on the second bust. And this guy, like, was done with all of his events for the day and, like, immediately came to this bust. I mean, that was insane. That 11 p.m. after, you know, talking to people all day, he comes to do a catch with us. It's wild. But we caught 24-year-old Jacob Bulmer yesterday of San Antonio. And, you know, he was very skittish. He apparently has been caught before in 2019 by just, like, I guess other people had to kind of do this. Nothing happened to him. So he met us when he saw me at the apartment. He started running. But we called him back, and he comes to talk to me, and he admits to molesting his sister when she was 12 years old, and his sister's friend, admits to coming to meet our 13-year-old decoy for sex, showing penis pictures, admits to receiving nudes from other children in the past couple of weeks and showing his penis to them as well. And, yeah, so the cops came up, you know, pretty easy arrest in my opinion, but then he runs away again and the cop did not catch him. So then I get back on the phone with him. I convince him to come meet me somewhere else saying, hey man, I don't want to press charges on you. We got to get this taken care of. He agreed. He falls for it. And then, you know, I have my friend on the phone with the cops while I'm like talking to, Mr. Bowman, and, yeah, the cops come up and I'm just shaking the pedo's hand. And when the cop comes, I kind of like push him into the cop, and then the cop arrests him. And then he starts like resisting, and you know, the cop tackles him, and Aaron's just holding the live stream. Just, you know, then this stuff's going down. It was freaking awesome.
You know, that is quite the team player, just sitting there and doing the stream for you.
Yeah.
They don't do that, politicians.
No.
Not a politician, by the way, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, him and Valentina Gomez have been freaking awesome. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's been other politicians that, you know, offer support and all that, but I have not seen anyone besides those two just be down and dirty like this.
It's crazy. So he has been charged, right?
Yeah, he's been charged with online solicitation of a minor, and the molestation happened in Fort Worth, so I hope that gets transferred over to them. But, you know, at least for coming to meet our fake decoy for sex, he got charged with that in San Antonio.
Okay, so that's good. That's good. I like to hear that. I want to talk to you too about other individuals, who claim to go after predators online. Cause like you alluded to, back in 2019, he might have had a confrontation with someone, but they never charged him. The reality is there's people online trying to do what you do, but you're doing it so that there's charges filed, they're held accountable through our legal system, but not everyone's that way. We've seen plenty of videos where individuals are confronting these pedos that they catch online, and instead of going through the court systems, they're assaulting them, and so you don't really get charges after that. What's your take on those?
Man, I think it's stupid, and obviously, you know, a lot of people don't look past what's right in front of them. Of course, it's nice to just look at a pedo getting beat up, but, you know, I did 10 days in jail in Virginia for a speeding ticket, I kid you not. And if that cop would have just beat my ass and done some police brutality on me, I would have absolutely chosen that over 10 days in jail. So now just think you're a pedophile facing 20 years in prison for coming to meet a kid and you just get beat up instead. I mean, it's the easiest way to just get off of a crime against humanity. So I don't endorse that. I mean, you know, we got people sentenced to life in prison in some cases, and I'm sure they would have rather gotten beat up than get life in prison.
Alex, I didn't know about this, and I had a conversation with a couple of J6ers in regards to pedos when they are brought into the federal, because they could speak only to federal, but when they're brought into federal prisons, that they're actually protected. Now, I know that also happens at local levels as well. I understand that there's a liability involved in this, and they have to protect inmates. They feel so, but what's your take on the extra layer of security that pedophiles get when they're brought into prison?
I mean, it's ridiculous because it's still like another level of shielding them from the consequence of their own actions. I mean, you know, they should all be treated equally just like all the other prisoners are. Like even when I was in like some Podunk County jail for 10 days for my speeding ticket, the Chomos had their own pod, and there are still ways that people would screw with them. Like they would like, they would like slide piss bags under the door and just step on the piss bags and like get it on the Chomos. Hilarious stuff. But yeah, no, they have their own little, suites where nothing really goes down. And I think it's soft. And I think, you know, putting them in general population would at least stop some of them from trying to do that stuff. Because, you know, we see a lot of comments on our YouTube videos of like, well, when they get to prison, they're going to get what's coming to them. But they really don't. They just kind of relax there.
Yeah. And that's the problem with all of this. They are. And I also saw that some of them are in low security prisons. I mean, I think that's insane that we allow that to happen. But here's the other thing, too. I mean, I remember, and we could talk about this with our audience, because I remember just a couple of months ago, you and I were speaking while you were in jail. I believe this was in Missouri.
Yeah.
And you were going after someone who you have caught previously and has a record. And they were, it's just someone who's been given too many times let off by prosecutors. And for some reason, you were charged in all of this. What's the status about that? And where are we today?
Well, what's today's date? The 19th. So in a week from now, I signed the plea deal to plead to a peace disturbance. I'm not getting any jail time for it, luckily. I don't know if I'm getting probation yet, but I hope it's not the case. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I don't think I need probation, but we'll see what the judge thinks about that. You know, I hope she is understanding of what we're doing. But yeah, no, this is a guy who is caught three separate times. First time, so he was working at Steak and Shake in Branson, Missouri. And he gets arrested in 2020 for sexually harassing an underage employee. He sent her 58 penis pictures communicating with her online. He got arrested for it. Somehow a year later, that charge gets dropped and expunged. Then 4 years later, we catch him going after our decoy account. He admits to molesting his own sister, named his sister, and said he wanted to have sex with our decoy account. He gets charged with, you know, going after our decoy. Somehow it just gets dropped. And then a few months later, he messages the same decoy account, tells the decoy about our YouTube video, and says, I still want to have sex with you. And so I go to his job this time, and this time he didn't really want to talk to me, which kind of makes sense, because usually they don't want to talk for a second time. But, you know, I felt at that time that Steak and Shake was defending this guy's actions, especially because they kept hiring him after getting caught multiple times. And there was a disagreement in the store, and I got charged with trespassing, harassment, and disturbing the peace. So, you know, I have no bad blow with Steak and Shake. I mean, he got arrested this time, actually, and I think that's because we kind of, you know, brought a lot of attention to it. But nobody's bailed him out from there. I think, you know, it took a little bit longer for some people to understand what he is than some people, and that's okay. But yeah, I'm pleading to a peace disturbance, so I'm going to have a misdemeanor on my record with no jail time.
It's just so ridiculous. And I also, you know, I've reached out to Steak and Shake. I know others have as well. And they do not support what happened in that restaurant that day. They strongly said that this was the franchise owner and not them as a brand. And so they wanted to echo that. So We'll continue to follow it as it unravels. It just shouldn't have happened in the first place. These individuals should not be able to work in fast food places because obviously that's where kids are.
Right. Like if he was working at a construction site, I don't think I would have came there and been like, oh, you're hiring this guy. I mean, still, I would hire a sex offender no matter what. But the fact that he's been charged before for harassing an underage employee at the same location, I mean, like, what the hell are we doing here with that, you know?
It's just so infuriating. But we see this all the time with, like, prosecutors not prosecuting crimes appropriately and then just getting people or letting these predators off the hook. They seem to have more empathy for the suspects rather than the victim. Is that what you witness?
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, Branson's kind of like it's kind of like a vacation town, so I don't know if some of that is like we just don't want sex predators to be shown here. I have no idea what the case is, but or if, you know, he has connections with someone there. I don't really know. All I know is that, you know, he was let off for so long and he's finally getting prosecuted now. And, you know, for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah, we are grateful. We're grateful for everything that you do. I can't even speak right now. We're grateful for everything that you do, Alex Rosen, because, listen, you're dealing with the worst of the worst. And I tell you all the time, I don't know how you do it. You always stay positive. You're always super optimistic. We got about 30 seconds. How would you describe why you were able to be so optimistic when you're dealing with the lowest of the low when it comes to human beings?
Well, I have fun talking to them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we caught the sex offender a few days ago in Terrell, Texas, Juan Rios, and he's not allowed to leave Dallas County. He left Dallas County to go meet my mom and my underage, the 11-year-old decoy account. And he admitted to tons of child porn. He admitted to a victim that he's never been charged for before. And he's right now sitting in Kaufman County Jail on a $150,000 bond. I mean, he's getting a crap ton of trouble. And I hope Laredo PD takes up the molestation stuff that he admitted to over there. So, you know, I have fun helping them get put away. I mean, I think it's fulfilling and made a lot of friends doing this.
Yeah. And you're doing an incredible job, my friend.
Thank
so
you.
Good for you. I love to highlight all the great things you're doing and your whole team because it doesn't take, it's not just one person. You've got a whole team of individuals helping you.
17 great people.
Great people. And folks, if you're at home right now and you want to support Alex Rosen's work, you got to head on over to his X page right now and become a subscriber. Because he's working off of your donations, off of your assistance, and he's doing great work. I mean, what else are you going to do? This is it. I subscribe to you on all platforms. Everyone right now, make sure you do just that. Alex Rosen, thank you for coming in studio for this.
You.
I appreciate your time.
It. All right.
All right. Mel Kay is joining us in just a few moments because there's changes over at the FBI, and she's got a lot to talk about.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feeling really great, fog lifting, to just over the top, crying, it feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest ultra wrestling blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So stir it, go ahead and take a half dropper or so, that's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it takes within about 30 minutes, starts peaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike.
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened to it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
We'll give you some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I'll take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago? A month ago?
Yeah, something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theauctionstore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it, I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. Almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think it's just the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better. And Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, folks. I'm filling in for my friend Harrison Smith on this beautiful Tuesday morning. In case you didn't know, I also host a show called Good Morning InfoWars. We just recently launched it. It is on InfoWars Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern time. You're going to want to tune into that, so add it to your schedule right now because we cover all the stories that the corporate media is not going to want to tell you about, and it's like a fast-paced news show, so I know you're really going to enjoy that. So add it to your calendar. We do a lot of incredible work here on InfoWars, and I want to make sure we keep highlighting just that. I also am on band.video for my podcast, The Brianna Morello Show, so make sure you sit there and follow that as well. Lots going on in the world. Speaking of that, I've been on the phones all day and all day yesterday trying to get to the bottom of a tip I had received yesterday morning. Now, I was tipped off that the Missouri AG was going to be making his way to the FBI. And I thought that was quite strange. As many of you know, Andrew Bailey is the current AG of Missouri. And well, just recently he was named the co-deputy director of the FBI. Now, if you're wondering, what does that even mean? None of us know. There's actually never been a co-deputy director of the FBI until now. Obviously, Director Kash Patel and the deputy director, Dan Bongino, have a lot going on, and they've got a lot of digging to do. And so they probably needed all the help they could get. Now, I've been calling around, asking around. It took a little bit of time before I heard back from Bailey's team, but they confirmed that, yes, he was going to be stepping into this new role at the FBI. So I know many of you at home were, trying to figure out, what does this mean for Dan Bongino? Is he out? Well, according to my sources in the FBI, I am told Dan Bongino's not going anywhere anytime soon. So what does this all mean? Well, joining me now to discuss, my good friend, Miss Mel Kay. She's the host of Mel Kay's Show on Rumble and on X. Another great follow, I must say. She's also done an incredible job with her book, Americans Anonymous, Restoring Power to the People, One Citizen at a Time. Mel, thank you for joining me. I called you yesterday afternoon to kind of go over what we just learned in regards to Bailey making his way to the FBI. I know you're a friend of Kash Patel's, so I wanted to kind of hear your take on this. So break it down to our audience. What do you make of this new addition to the FBI?
Well, what I think is going on, honestly, is that DNI Gabbard is finally taking the reins of what exactly the ODNI position was meant to be, which was a position that could stick their hands into any of the 18 intelligence agencies, pull out what she wants and believes is necessary to declassify, and also put together reports from all these different groups. Now, the DNI has never been used as, you know, I think the Patriot Act was unconstitutional, but it created this position that did not exist before as kind of the fulcrum of all of the intelligence agencies. And Tulsi has had a very hard time. I hear behind the scenes she's been battling with the old guard of the CIA. They do not want her putting out a lot of this information. But what I believe is that they've hit a lot more than they imagined they would through the process. And it looks to me like we have multiple investigations on the front lines of the FBI that also require a good legal mind like Bailey to sift through what exactly are the steps forward for accountability, because you have to realize right now she has a lot of evidence about Dr. Fauci, gain of function, all of that. She's passing that on. She's also got a lot of evidence about Russiagate and about the fake impeachment and about lawfare. That's another one. And I am told that in this week, this next week, we are going to see tremendous information about the cheating in our elections, not just since 2016, but all the way back to 2009 and the election of Barack Obama. And frankly, it looks like our election system, not just here but around the world, is part of also the what I call the narco-terrorist financial system that has been running up and down between the islands and Venezuela and Haiti and Epstein Island, this whole route that's very big with human trafficking and with sex trafficking, guns and drugs, largely tied to different CIA black ops and other things that I think are also part of that. So at the same time, he's also designated the cartels to be terrorist organizations and sent people down there. I have a feeling that this also will open up that can of worms that has been in denial by our country for all these years, all the way back to Mena, Arkansas, when it was expressed that there was obviously gun and drug running to the Sandinistas. Really, nobody's ever looked into what is going on between big business, big banking, and the cartels and the trafficking networks. So what I am seeing right now is that Tulsi Gabbard fought through a battle. They've been trying to take her down and get in her way. She hasn't allowed it, but it has opened up five different fronts of information that is new and is being declassified as fast as they can. But again, they need all the help they can get at the top level because, of course, the swamp is still very much embedded both at the FBI and CIA. You know, I'm one of the people that don't believe that it can be reformed, let alone that the CIA has never really been an American institution, really a global institution. But in the meantime, I just think that we have a lot on the plate, and if we want accountability, we really need to compartmentalize, put specific people up to specific tasks and move forward. Because just the status quo FBI, CIA, you know, DEI, NSA nonsense is all kind of moot at this point.
Yeah. And Mel, you've been talking about this for a very long time now. And for folks at home who haven't followed, I highly recommend you go over to your Rumble page and kind of dissect what you've been talking about for all these years, because now everyone else is starting to talk about it. And it's becoming a new trending topic to kind of call out these agencies for what they've done over the years. But I wanted to go back to the election fraud, because you said something that was very interesting. You know, I wanted my friend, I'm a little biased here, but Mr. Ed Martin to become the special prosecutor and investigating all of the election fraud. Now, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case, given the fact that he was now assigned to work, you know, Tish James, the New York AG's office, as well as Adam Schiff's mortgage fraud cases. But the election fraud cases, I think, should be a top priority, because you just cited this goes all the way back to Barack Obama. But we're not really seeing much in the way of movement on that front with this new administration. And then we're also seeing President Trump take the True Social and say that he's going to make it a priority through executive orders to kind of reel in the mail-in ballots and the election voting machines. So what do you make of that? Because they're not really doing much. And I'm talking about President Trump's doing what he can, but we're not seeing Congress do much. And we're also not seeing I guess we'll just go with AG Pam Bondi's office really doing much.
Yeah, I mean, what I believe from my sources is that it is much bigger than the United States. Election fraud machine, the NGOs that keep it going, the money that keeps going, is not centralized in America. What my understanding is that it is a collaboration among many countries to control elections around the world, and that would be Venezuela, Serbia, China, Iran. I mean, it is a massive, massive worldwide problem. As we talked about, you and I, a couple years ago, this has been in every single country an issue to overthrow governments that are not going along with the international banking cartel and those that want to keep the one world, you know, liberal rules-based order going, even though it has completely failed us and the world. So what I believe is that this is bigger than America, and America is just going to be exposing it. But the election fraud is also same, I would say, part and parcel with the fraud that is behind USAID, National Endowment for Democracy, regime change operations, color revolution operations. You go all the way back, you can see this. But I think that this is going to be centered around foreign governments working with the CIA to overthrow elections, and that is much bigger than just, you know, one man or one thing. I think it's probably going to be a joint global task force at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think it's worth looking into, and I think we have to look into it. We've got to get a handle on all of this. And I also think it's interesting, right, because we're watching in the mainstream media, as soon as USAID got cut, all of a sudden all of these shows are being canceled on the left. And we're watching, you know, networks completely collapse, even MSNBC now rebranding to MS Now. Mel, it's not just low ratings. There's something else behind it, it feels like. What's your take on that?
Well, 1,000% that's true. And I mean, it is massive. But at the end of the day, I really do believe that the American people have to be very honest with ourselves. It has been decades upon decades of people pointing at the CIA and the corruption and who are they working for. And I am digging into that big time around when it was created and actually the powers that be. So to me, I think we are still dealing with what JFK warned about and other people, including Eisenhower, with this military industrial complex, this rogue State Department that was totally usurped basically a long, long time ago, but certainly when George H.W. Bush took the helm with Dick Cheney. And I think that we are dealing with a realization that the CIA has been working against this country for foreign interests, and we have to expose that at this point. How many more years are we going to go? It's been 60 years of accusations and hidden investigations and squandered investigations. And you know what? The American people don't want to be the police of the world. We don't want to throw over regimes. We don't want endless wars. So we're just going to have to deal with the truth about the CIA and what they've done all these years and expose it from the top down, starting with John Brennan backwards. And I think we're going to do that, but it's time for us to be honest with exactly what USAID, National Endowment for Democracy, and their partners in the State Department and CIA have been doing in the name of the American people. And it has squandered trillions of dollars as well. So I just think that we are on the cusp of a, like I say, JFK might have started it. I think it's time to end it. And I think that that's what we're on the cusp of at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would love to see more digging into all of that. I mean, I know Doge did a good job at just kind of defunding it temporarily, but I'm very concerned that when the next administration comes back around, that these little programs, these little government funded programs will begin to pop back up. What's your take on what's going on right now with Congress? Because they're not codifying any of this.
Well, Congress to me is all left and right, Republican, Democrat at this point are all bought and paid for or loyal to whatever or blackmailed or bribed. It is a very ugly place. I am all for federalizing D.C. because I don't think it should exist. There should be no special district that is out of control in America the way D.C. has been. It's a total crime scene from top to bottom. And the least of it, I believe, is the violent crime. It is the white collar crime, the fraud against the people of this country, the looting and lying since World War II. And like I said, I really believe that somewhere, I'm now writing my second book between World War II, 44 and 54, those years, America was really sold out, and I think trillions upon trillions of dollars have been looted and put all over the world, all over the all over offshore banking, all of this by USAID and its tentacles and these NGO models. You know, years ago, back in the 50s, they wanted to look into the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Carnegie Institute Foundation, because of the model. But the Rockefeller model has built the beast that is the George Soros network, that is that USA was funding all over the world. It's the NGOs that need to be examined. They should not be 501c3s, 501c4s. No taxpayer dollars should go to billionaire-funded international NGOs, many of whom are still protected under the International Organization Immunity Act of 1947, which we need to rescind immediately. And in the meantime, realize that this NGO network also goes hand-in-hand with what's happened at our universities. You look at the last 20 years, particularly at the Poison Ivy League, and all these people graduating with PhDs of unusable subjects or master's degrees in, like, you know, foreign lesbian literature from the 18th century, and all you think is, where do they go? You know where they go? Right into the NGO bank, the million NGOs that run to funnel these students that they brainwash into being activists into the NGO world, and from that point on, they circumvent the country, and they work above our government to manipulate this nation and the world, and we really have to look into the CIA/NGO networks that have been literally circumventing this country and the vote and will of the people.
Yeah, and Mel, before you go, I wanted to hit on the banking topic again, because we're watching as J.P. Morgan is saying that they believe that the Fed's going to lower interest rates heading into September, or in September, I should say. You and I have had this conversation before. People are scratching their heads, and they're wondering, why is Jerome Powell not lowering the rates? But you've done an incredible job, and I want you to detail it before you go, about how Jerome Powell doesn't work for the American people. So who does he actually work for?
He actually works for the Bank of International Settlements that owns all the banks, including our Federal Reserve. And don't forget, they are protected under the International Organization Immunity Act of 1947, still to this day, which is unacceptable. The Bank of International Settlements has no oversight. It has zero. Nobody has jurisdiction. It's basically protected tighter than the Vatican. And frankly, he's on the board of that. He's also on the board of multiple European financial commissions. Therefore, the European want their World War III by any means necessary. They're still hell-bent on destroying Russia, taking apart Russia, you know, running the world through Brussels and Geneva under a one-world financial system. So they're pushing forward while we're dealing with all our individual countries. And the fact of the matter is, he is doing what he needs to do for his bigger picture and his relationship with BlackRock. And that now that Larry Fink has been moved to the chairman of the World Economic Forum, and we know all about them with the fourth industrial revolution, the great reset, the going direct. You know, it's all very sketchy. And in my opinion, the Federal Reserve should be ended, and every international institution that has anything to do with their tentacles inside our financial system should be cut off. And we should nationalize again our financial system, as that is the only way it works. But in the meantime, you have to understand that the European Union and their overlords in the banking system are pushing for World War III, because every time that they've been behind World War I and World War II, after that, they do the reconstruction. And BlackRock's already, before he even got promoted, saying that rebuilding Ukraine will be an $800 billion job. So it's very, very sketchy. And the bottom line is, whatever's going on in Ukraine, it's a lot bigger than people think. And it's a lot more about the international financing and money laundering operation that has been run through there since the end of the USSR. And look, we are in a shifting stage, but right now it's unprecedented times, and the American people have to decide exactly what they want. And this is not about our government. It is about we, the people of the United States. And if we want to go forward and be the leaders of peace and prosperity and fairness in all lands, we have to say enough's enough. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights stand in America, and we're going to stand for that. And if not, we're just going to keep being circumvented by international banks, international NGOs, and a globalist movement that has nothing to do with freedom, liberty, or privacy. And so the American people better wake up and take notice that it is the American people that are standing in the way of this future global public infrastructure nonsense. And we are the ones that can, we are the only people on planet Earth, if we actually take our Constitution and live it, and our Bill of Rights and live it, and get involved locally and do the work where we are, we can save this country and the world from a World War III, let alone the continuation of an international banking cartel that runs the world for its own benefit.
Yeah. And guys, if you're at home right now wondering, this is why Mel K is one of my close friends, because every time I talk to you, Mel, I get a little smarter. I don't even know if that's how you say it.
Thank you. A little bit.
But folks, if you want to get a little smarter too, why not just say it like that? Head on over. She's got a great book. It's Americans Anonymous, Restoring Power to the People, One Citizen at a Time. The power is up to you whether you want to take it or not. And that's actually going to be my next segment in just a moment. But Mel, I know you're busy. I know you got a show on the way. So thank you for jumping on with us. Again, also go over to the Mel K Show, like it on Rumble, give it a follow. Mel, thank you for jumping on with me today. I appreciate you as always.
Anytime. You're the best. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So we're talking about you, the people, having all the power. Well, many of you guys know I am obviously an independent journalist, but folks, it's kind of a lonely job. And if you're thinking maybe I kind of want to do a little digging on my own, I'm here to tell you, you should do some digging. I'm going to give you some tips. As an independent journalist, I'm constantly filing FOIA requests. That is the Freedom of Information Act. At a local level, most of the time it's known as like a public records request. But there are so many things that you get your hands on and dissect yourself and dig into that you don't need to be a journalist to do. In fact, you probably will do a better job than most journalists these days. So let me give you some advice. Now, I want to give you a little back talk too, because it's not just if you're looking to do some digging on an issue or let's say a government document that you're looking to dig into or whatever it is, communications internally, like that's what you get through a FOIA request on a federal level. But on the local level, let's say you have an interaction with law enforcement and you would like to obtain for your records the body cam footage. Well, depending upon the state you live in, you are actually able to obtain that body cam footage. And I learned the hard way that it's really important, not so much the hard way, but I learned that you must hold law enforcement accountable as well. You must be the checks and the balance to make sure law enforcement's doing their job. Now, I've talked about it on my show just a couple of weeks ago. I was followed into my apartment complex by a Middle Eastern man. Didn't know who he was, and I didn't actually see him behind me. But I just know that he followed me into the stairwell and was aggressively approaching me in the stairwell. And I was able to get him out of the stairwell of a property I believe, and my management company told me he didn't live in. So he shouldn't have been there in the first place. But I went, called 911, and an officer did come to my apartment to take a detailed report, and he seemed to dismiss it all, tell me that he just thought it was a flirting incident, even though the man had followed me into my building, into a very sketchy stairwell, and had followed me up the steps, skipping steps, and coming after me. So the cop seemed to be very dismissive, and I wanted to make sure this person didn't live in the building, and he didn't follow through, in my opinion, I think he didn't follow through, with obtaining the surveillance footage, because I never heard from anyone. So I had to reach out to the management company, and they did send that footage over to police. Now, that's when they started taking it seriously. But here's the trick. I submitted 4 Freedom of Information Act requests to my local police department. And what I found was really disturbing. Now, obviously, I was very upset to find a man who was following me into my apartment complex. And then I was really upset to find out that the police officer didn't enter the surveillance footage of this man's face in his evidence. So it has a police report where I believe the officer lied. And then in detail, the officer is just describing it as a flirting incident. Now, next week, I'm going to be releasing the surveillance footage because through those 4 FOIA requests, I was able to actually obtain surveillance footage from the police department. They had a camera in front of their building and they didn't know what I was requesting. And so unwillingly, they submitted me the footage of a man literally chasing me down the street, and I had no idea he was running behind me. Now, why is this important? Well, only because I had then also requested the police report, I learned that he didn't enter in as evidence, and I also learned that he did not tell the truth. Now, I kept everything in writing, was circling back, and went down to the police station, and the supervisor was very apologetic, but the reason why I'm telling you is this. Let's say you're in a custody battle and you're interacting, your ex is interacting with law enforcement and you want to see what your ex said, or you just want to figure out what interaction, what was said to law enforcement. You can do that. Now, it depends on your state laws, but you have to go to these websites. Just all you have to do is Google, let's just say Dallas Police Freedom of Information Act request, or just say public records request. The form will populate online. Fill it out. Submit it. Get everything possible. You want to be as detailed as you possibly can. And I'm telling you, it's not the first time this has actually saved me. As many of you guys know, we're all in the conservative media world. We get a lot of death threats. The FBI it's still an ongoing investigation from what I understand, but they're also investigating things like the swatting that's been going on. And I obviously was receiving threats. So all of that's really important. And I got everything that I need. But you need to document every incident. So let's just say you are the victim of a crime or you're a victim of an ongoing case. Do your best. Push back. Submit these public records requests because you never know when you're going to need something. You have to be the one pushing back, requesting these documents because you never know. Now, thankfully, I caught on to this and I was able to go to the police station, speak with the officer, the supervisor of the officer, who apologized to me. The other supervisor ended up calling me, but they all apologized. They said they were going to correct the issue. And just now on air, I am being told that I'm going to be handed the stairwell surveillance footage and that it has now been entered in as evidence. And I will be able to get access to that, which I'm thankful for. But it's up to you. I was talking to my Lyft driver the other day and he was telling me that there was an incident with another police department in Texas. And because of his friend who was very aggressive with law enforcement in regards to finding out who hit and drove off after hitting his nephew later dying, this individual apparently went around looking for surveillance footage. Folks, you remember I told you exclusively, I got the audio recordings of an individual who allegedly says that he disposed of the murder weapon that was used to kill Jamie White. We are our checks and balances. Do not give up. You need to hold both local and federal officials accountable. And the best way to do so, FOIA requests. Make sure you look up to, depending upon the agency, federal government has 20 business days to fulfill the request. If not, you can't actually file a lawsuit. So you got to do some digging into all of this, but I'm telling you, man, we are all in this fight together and we need to be in this fight together. Speaking of just that, I am very excited. Like I told you guys earlier in the program, you got to grab my new book. It's my new project. I'm very excited about Melania Trump, Elegance Back in the White House. Folks, I love this because she is a beautiful, beautiful first lady. We don't celebrate beauties and we're forced to pretend like Michelle Obama was we'll just say beautiful, beautiful person. But you and I both know she wasn't. Thank you so much for InfoWars having me in studio today and filling in for Mr. Harrison Smith. I'll catch you here Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern time.
We need funds. We're fighting the globalists at Point Blank Range. And they got a receivership hearing with Judge Guerra Gamble that ran the Texas show trial next week to send the sheriffs here. I get it could be within days next Wednesday to shut us down. And I'm sure we'll get lots of funds then once we're shut down. Be like, oh, God, he really did need help. Oh, yeah. We have been battling and barely surviving. They turned the internet off here before. They had a fake sale to Bloomberg's front group. Remember all that? And it was because we didn't give up and the crew didn't give up. When I told the crew, no, we're going to beat this, don't go. And I stayed here and slept here a couple times. That we're still here. And because you bought the products, we had enough money for lawyers to go battle it and beat it. Everybody listening needs to get off the fence, get off the bench, get up at the plate, and needs to go become a VIP. $30 a month. See it as a donation. You get $40 each month to spend the store. Sales on top of everything. Special deals. Special offers just to you. It's insane. And then if you really just want to support and you don't want methylene blue or turmeric, you're crazy if you don't, or Ultimate Life Force, the best cardiovascular spike protein detox, everybody should be taking it. I mean, it's the best. Ultimate Life Force is the best cardiovascular, heart health, spike protein detoxer. Every man, woman, and child should take at least one regimen of it, see how you feel. It does dramatic things. We have the strongest turmeric. You should get it. And I got a lot of news to cover. I won't sit here and beat a dead horse, but the news we get out is so powerful, and it's that less than 1% of people that buy stuff at theauctionstore.com that make all this possible. And this fight is your fight. They want us off the air because they want to shut down focal points of organizations that hold the Trump administration's feet to the fire and warn Trump and warn his advisors and have a big effect and big pull, as the administrations have said and as the Democrats have said. They've come after Trump. They've sued Trump. They've had their operatives in there, and they see our stuff everywhere. Step into the zone of history and understand that you are the key. You are the variable. You are the Paul Revere's. You are the resistance. This dog don't hunt without you.